the regular people in terms of the Copyright Amendment Bill, and that is Dr. Evelyn LaSorcia from the CDR, CDG there, from CCRD, and her colleague, Ms. Mashendri, IP Policy, her other colleague, Ms. Nkosanati.
Perhaps I could assist you. Mashendri is the lady's first name. Her surname is Padiatri.
Well, you see, it's... look here. Right. Thank you. Now, that's, very useful. I can remember 40 years ago calling a next-door neighbour by one name, and she never corrected me till she said farewell. it's useful to have those small matters addressed. Thank you very much. So we've got the Ms. Padiachi here. Thank you. Policy CCRD. And then Ms. Pragoria Mabaso Mavungo, Director CCRD, the Legislative Drafter. Do we still have with us CBRPC? Kadi Besi, Yes, got a different jacket on. And then Mr. Lloyd Matsimbi. All right. I was looking for the little flower. Wasn't there. Reminded me of my beautiful rose garden. But there we are. And then we've got Mr. Mbiba. I'm just looking if we do or don't. Yes, we do. And then from the Deputy Director, Cultural Development, DAC, and Mr. Siveka Mabunda, Deputy Director, Audio Visual, Ms. Makhotsi Makheti, Director, Heritage Policy. Thank you for bringing once again a full team with you, DDG, or DD. Then we also have with us here, I hope I've acknowledged all of the players on this side here, with one exception, and that is we have with us here today a state legal advisor. I'm just looking for your name here. While I'm waiting for that, we have Ms. Naidu, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer, commonly referred to as an institutional, research or rather archive. And there we are. But it's Sean van Breda, van Breda. So we must thank you for being here. I understand you're here in the nature of observing, although obviously you'd be very welcome to comment at any time.
Thank you.
All right. Those are all of our visitors, from what I understand. And then we've got apologies. We have a lot of people on party business. Honourable Albert, but let us first adopt the agenda. We are finishing at 4 o'clock. This is not a new program, just for the record. It's an old program, a program that was here last Tuesday. And we do have a change to next week's program. So please make a note of it now. Next Thursday, it was stated 2 weeks ago you'd be finishing at 1 or 3 weeks ago. But given the progress of this bill, we will only be finishing at 4 o'clock next Thursday. You will get the updated program on that. Can we have someone to propose adoption? Yes, Honourable Tierko, seconded by the Honourable Kachalia. Right. Now, on that note of the agenda, the apologies, we have an apology from the Honourable Kachalia to leave early on party business. I take it on that one. I'm just given the information now by the Secretary. And then we also have an apology from the Honourable MacPherson, who is here the whole day, but could be away for an extra half an hour due to a prior arrangement in the midday period. But seeing as we're not moving all round exploring Parliament today, we should be okay. We're actually fixed in this location, and whoever it is that complained as an observer about the haphazardness and the disorganisation of the meeting yesterday, I do apologise to them, and I've indicated to administration that I do not want a repeat performance, that no, it is not our policy to have venues all over for one meeting, especially if the meeting is long-standing. But I do apologise, I'm not aware of your name. Right, well, there we are. We immediately move on. And welcome back, Ms. Sheldon. Apparently the doctor booked you off till Friday.
Yeah.
So I hope you won't collapse. Anyway, so we'll start off presentation by Advocate van der Merwe. I hope we are on track there on the revised matrix on the copyright bill. And as I recall, we were moving towards the tribunal. Would that be correct, Advocate? But it's up to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I understood this morning, is that what I will quickly do is to give the committee just a bird's eye view of where we are, and then the DTI will be dealing with the two big issues that are still outstanding, big issues of collecting societies and the tribunal itself. So I'll go through the matrix quite quickly, but just so that because then it gives members just a feel of where we are in respect of this bill. So clause one on the first page of the matrix, we will look at the definition section more in detail at the end, but at this point in time we do have a definition for visual artistic work in respect of resale royalty rights. There was also a request for the definition of the user, but from DTI's presentation yesterday and then from members' input, it seems that it's not necessary to have that definition, so at least there is currently nothing outstanding on that. Clause 2, nothing outstanding. Clause 3, we agree that funded by be removed, and then there was an explanation from the DTI on the one flag issue, namely whether all international and local organizations should be included. They indicated that the reason for including local organizations is because the shareholders might be foreign. So what we perhaps they need to just look at is that it must still be as prescribed. Otherwise, we open it up to every organization. So that is perhaps just something that the committee will still have to look at and confirm. Then the next flag issue on that clause 3, was the issue of the works of the state being commercially exploited by researchers. And what the DTI indicated to us is that, look, this is an enforcement matter. It is something that the state has the power currently to enforce, so we need not make an amendment to this bill. So at least that it seems has also been sorted. Clause 4, there were no problems with Clause 4 in any event. Clause 5, here we have the issue of the contractual freedom, the minimum requirements for the contract. And the committee wanted the matter to be retrospective. So we need to just keep in mind that the retrospective application will have to be advertised for comment. The one, it's a small thing that is still outstanding, was raised by Mr. Kachalia, was about the issue of whether the fact that we're including minimum content, whether that still allows for contractual freedom. And in this point, what the members perhaps can have a look at is if you page over to the next page, where I have proposed a draft, you will see that we in subsection 4, fair enough, now put it up on the slide, indicates the minimum content of this contract. So if we need to make it a little bit more vague so that there's more freedom to contract, then that can be done. But I think at this point in time, it kind of just gives the big areas that must be in the contract. So I think that we are fine on contractual freedom, but that is something that was flagged. If we go to the next clause, clause 6, there were no amendments required. Clause 7, initially there was a view from DTI that the clause be removed because it is dealt with under resale royalty, but They considered the concern that I pointed out, and they agreed that the clause should be retained. So it seems that there are no further outstanding issues on this clause either. Of course, the issue of retrospective application will just have to be advertised for comment. If we go to the next clause, it's still clause 7, but now section 7B. The DTI yesterday made some proposals in respect of including domiciles and retaining residents. In the proposed wording, I have corrected that. Then Trade and Industry also proposed that there must be a fixed rate that could be reviewed regularly. So I've just made a note there. We need that wording just from the DTI so that we can include that. The reason I didn't draft anything there is I'm not 100% sure that I understand what they want fixed and how. And so just to get some wording from them, and then we can work on that.
Yeah, mention that again, that 7A, is it?
Yes, that is section 7B.
7B.
So what we just have to have presented yesterday, where the DTI said that they agree. What we have here is the resale royalty rights aspect. So the bill provides that we will that the minister will prescribe the rate of the resale royalty. And the DTI indicated that it might be a good thing to start off with a rate. And I think in passing, they proposed 5% for the resale royalty, and then that be reviewed on a regular basis, perhaps every 3 years. So maybe, Chair, just if you want to follow in the bill, 7B is on page 8 of the bill.
Right. I do want to raise some issues around that, but I don't want to stop you as we're going through, but rather for all of us, an issue you wish to raise, just note, and then when Advocate van der Merwe has completed this side of the process, we can raise those queries. Right.
Thank you, Chair. Then, so that is the only aspect on that one that is currently outstanding. If we go to the next clause, next section under clause 7, first off, there was a request here or a concern here that you have an artist who presents a work to a company, maybe to the board of directors of a movie production company. The board says, no, we're not really interested in this script of yours. The author then goes away. And a month later, he sees that there's casting for a script that looks very much like the script that he presented. How will he be able to protect himself? And the proposal was that we need to create a register. But DTI pointed out that, no, but there are much easier ways of dealing with this. You just email yourself or you send the script to yourself by registered mail. So there are ways currently of dealing with it. There was a concern that it might affect the nature of copyright if we have this register. Then the next issue on that specific section was the Indigenous Cultural Expressions, the IP Laws Amendment Act issue. What the DGI proposed is that just the word National Trust be removed and that we then retain the other phrases, but we have a transitional provision. So that has also been resolved. If we then go to the next page, Section 7D, there were no amendments. Section 7E, the same issue of the IP Laws Amendment Act, that has now been resolved. Clause 8, no amendments required. Clause 9, Section 8A, this is the same issue as the previous one, 7A and 6A. It's just the issue of the retrospective application that will have to be advertised for comment. If we go over onto the next page and the page after that, Clause 10, Section 9, no amendments required. Clause 11, Section 9A. Here we still have a flagged issue. What we have done here is that we've brought in the issue of lock sheets. Lock sheets in itself will have to be advertised. But what we then have is whether the lock sheet should be added or if it should replace the current process. So what we have, there was a concern raised initially by Honourable Hadebe, in fact, that especially with your new artist, you want some kind of agreement. CIPC yesterday indicated that the whole industry have kind of have a pre-agreement about how you will be doing this needle time, that your music will be played, etc., etc. And they've also indicated that if you have to ask permission first, you might affect the industry. So with all of that in mind, and it's lucky that they are still here, so we can discuss it and just get more information on that, so that that decision can be taken. Do we replace that process with the lock sheet, or is it something on top and we still require that permission beforehand? The next question was about an offence, and it was agreed that if you don't submit the lock sheet or you don't keep your lock sheets, you don't record, that in itself should be an offence. And the DGI has requested that we need to review the penalties. So I have proposed something, but I think that we need to just discuss the actual amounts, because the Act provides for first offenders and for second and further offenders, which is a higher penalty. So we need to do that, and the committee has also requested that the DGI just do some comparison with other countries so that we have a better understanding when we get to those amounts. The last issue on that clause was the Indigenous community aspect, which has been resolved. So if members page over, you will see what, because we had an amount of 5,000, we had a percentage of 10,000, of 10%. So what I've currently done is keeping those amounts in mind. I have done for first offence 5% of turnover or 5,000, whichever is the greater amount, that is the maximum fine. Or in the second and further offences, then 10,000 or 10%. So it's just a proposal. It's not cast in stone. It's just that we need to kind of differentiate between first and second offenders. So that is just something to consider there. If we page over clause 12, clause 13, no amendments required. Clause 14. Here we're dealing with the issue of fair use, section 12A. What we have, what came out of the discussions is that the bill is correctly worded, but the DTI might come and confirm if there are small changes required. Something that I just want to point out to members at this stage on section 12A, and if members would like to follow in the bill, it is on page 16. We have in section 12A, subsection 1, paragraph B. We say in determining whether an act done in relation to a work constitutes fair use, all relevant factors shall be taken into account, including but not limited to. And then we list four factors. Now, yesterday, I presented to the committee an opinion that we received, or an opinion that is now from a legal point of view, it's not a written opinion, it was an email with some advice from Professor Schoenwetter, and he indicated that there is a fifth element that Singapore has. That fifth factor is the possibility of obtaining the work or the adaptation within a reasonable time at an ordinary commercial price. So in other words, when you want to see if something, so I've now used the work, and I'm saying, but it's fair use, what I've done is fair use. Now we look at all these four factors. What Singapore also has is an additional factor to say, can you obtain this work in the in the market at a reasonable commercial price? Professor Schoenwetter indicated that Australia also had this specific factor and that they repealed that from their legislation. And he indicated that although it is currently part of the Singapore legislation, they are planning on repealing it. Then we received some advice from Mr. Andre Myberg, who is on the technical panel, who's one of the technical panel members. And he said, but that is a little bit misleading because there isn't a formal decision to repeal. In fact, there was, according to him, it seems that comes from a survey within Singapore. And some people said yes, remove, and some people said no, don't. So in other words, the committee should not accept that that fifth factor should not be included in the bill because other countries don't want it. So it is something the committee can consider, whether we should add that fifth factor. In other words, can you obtain it commercially? Maybe trade and industry can just address more on why they did not include it in the bill itself as the bill is introduced. I'm sure that there was a rationale why they said, no, this factor is not something that we need to keep in mind. But I also just want to point out to members that the four factors that we list in our bill aren't an, what do we call it, it's not a closed list of factors. We say that in determining whether an act done in relation to a work constitutes fair use, all relevant factors shall be taken into account, including, and then we list our four factors. In other words, the fact that it is commercially available could be considered in relevant circumstances. So it is not that we exclude it, it is just that it is not specifically mentioned. But I think also for members, I think it was important just to point that out, because we don't want to make a decision on information that is not 100% correct. So for members to just understand that. But then also, I think members' viewpoint was, look, we don't have to copy the Singapore Act word for word, and we can add to the Singapore, you know, what Singapore has, because we are making it for ourselves. So perhaps when we look at that, it is something that we can consider and then decide yes or no. If we then go on to clause 14, what members indicated here is this is the issue that was outstanding was the fact that you could make a copy of a work of your own, you could make a copy of the work that you own. And it was indicated that you must be able to make personal copies. But then if we look at, and the proposal then that I have there, is if we look at subsection 1, paragraph J, it says the making of a copy of such work by an individual of their own copy of the work, or a personal copy of the work made by the individual for the individual's personal use, which is not commercial. So it seems that Roman numeral 2 captures what we want to say. So my proposal is that we then take out that Roman numeral 1, which is contentious and seems to be open to more than one interpretation, because we still allow a personal copy for personal use to be made anyway.
On that, because you've directed this specifically at them, and it looks like people are in agreement. I'm just looking at all of you, colleagues. Right.
Thank you, Jim. Then, still on clause 14, section 12C, there were no concerns there. 12D, the issue of the IP Laws Amendment Act, that has been sorted. There was a question here about who determines what reasonable price is, and the response from the DGR was, it is a market issue. Clause 15, clause 16, clause 17, clause 18, there were no issues on that before. Going over to on the page of clause 19, this was a request that when we look at the exceptions regarding protection of computer programs, that we give a lot of access, you know, whatever seems to be fair. So, I am proposing something where we would then include the UCT proposals as well as the Anton Mostert Chair proposals. The issue that was flagged here was something Mrs. Fubbs raised about the Microsoft case where Microsoft tried to stop this in respect of their programs. So that is still something that DTR will have to come back to the committee on. Clause 20, there was a concern about whether galleries should be included in the exceptions of museums and archives and so on. And the response that we received from DTI is that if you look at best practice, galleries are included. If you look at WIPO, galleries are included. So accordingly, no amendments here are required. Clause 20, there were no concerns there. Clause 21, no concerns there. And then clause 22, this is the issue of commissioned work, section 21. Their trade and industry proposed, if you turn over the page, you'll see that DDI proposed that we should follow the Canadian model, which is totally the opposite of what we currently have. So the author, if there's no contract that determines ownership, and I think that from the discussions yesterday, I think it is quite important that we make it clear, number one, whether we require a written contract. We need to understand that if the legislation requires a written contract, it means that if there is no written contract, the transaction is invalid. So we need to also just be cautioned. You know, that might have some implications. But perhaps what we need to just say is that if the agreement between the parties do not provide for ownership, then the default position, and if we then follow the Canadian model, the author will be the owner, and the commissioner will have a license to do what the purpose for which the work was commissioned. So that is perhaps something just to consider, but DDI will bring some wording on this, and then we can look at that.
I'm just dragging it because I want to find out when we're getting the wording. You know what I mean? We say getting it, but when? Today or when? But move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just maybe on that, I'm not speaking for DDI, but we've had discussions on wording, and I have been proposing some wording, but it is very necessary that the DDI's expert and drafter also look at that wording, because it might make legal sense to me, but it might not work in practice. So that is quite important. And then conversely, if DDI proposes something, I would like to have a look at it so that I make sure that it reflects what the committee has asked. So we need to kind of have that discussion between us, and when we the arrangement for next week, Thursday, I would request that we be given time until then to come up with wording that we can then present to the committee on that Thursday. The next clause, clause 23, this is the issue of assignment of licenses. Now, we had a concern here that if the assignment is for 25 years and that right reverts back to the author, what happens to any existing contracts? The proposal that I made was that, well, we must simply make that reversion subject to whatever contract has been entered into. Trade indicated that they are a bit concerned about that, because you are now subjecting the author to contracts that he or she had no control over. And they, in fact, propose that we then limit the right of the person to whom the work was assigned or the copyright was assigned to enter into contract. I have a bit of a concern about that because it means that the example that I gave to someone yesterday was, so I've assigned my work. What you do when you assign is you assign the full copyright ownership to someone. So I've written a play. I'm assigning that to a producer, and he's going to put it on. He's already got the theatre. Everything is booked. He buys it from me. He pays me amount of money. I assign it for the 25 years. Well, that no problem there. We know it will come back to me after 25 years. Then the theatre goes bankrupt. No other theatre is interested in this work. The producer says, well, okay, it's my loss. I've got this play. I'm going to shelve it for the next 25 years. I don't know what to do with it. 10 years later, the owner of that theatre says, look, it was my partner that messed everything up. I'm now rehabilitated. I can put this play on for you. But I want at least 25 years right to use this. Now you're sitting with 10 years left or 15 years left. So there is a bit of a problem. We might be limiting the purpose of the assignment. So we need to maybe just think about that. So that is why that is flagged. But then either way, whether we bound the author to the existing contracts or whether we limit the right of the person to whom the copyright was assigned, that will have to be advertised so that we get comments on that. Then whether the period should be 25 years, that was agreement, and of course it is up to 25 years. The next clause, clause 24, this is the orphan works, and DDI is of the view the clause should remain, and in fact I've discussed it with Ms. Padihachi as well yesterday, and we can't just link this to fair use as we thought we could. Because if you link it to fair use, it's an exception and there's no royalties payable. So already you will have fair use allowing you to use portions of orphan work. But if you want to use the whole work, so in other words, it's no longer fair use, then there must be some provision for royalty. So it is necessary for this clause to stay. DGI will just revert with maybe see if there's a need to change the wording or if the wording as it is in fact good. Of course, there is just the issue of the you can't limit the 5 years because that constitutes expropriation, and the owner is immediately entitled to claim the rights associated with his or her ownership. The next clause is clause 25. There was a lot of discussion yesterday, and I think there will still be a lot of discussion today, so that issue is just flagged. All of these things, we can just go on to the next one. There's just one point that I want to make to members to just keep in mind. We were talking about how long collecting societies may retain royalties and the issue of interest. First off, that will have to be advertised. Secondly, we must keep in mind that if you charge interest, it means that if we bring the issue of interest in, we will have to keep in mind what the National Credit Act says, because interest is very closely linked to being a creditor. So we need to just keep that effect in mind. Perhaps we could rather, there might be other ways of rather wording it than calling it interest. I understand the intention. The intention is, if you keep my money and you retain it for 3 months, then I should be getting the interest that you're getting from your bank because you've been enriched. But there might be ways around this. I'm just highlighting that we need to keep in mind how the acts work together. Clause 26, there were no amendments. Clause 27, section 27, the DGI confirmed that the technological protection measures, which remember, it is a balancing act. And the DGI confirmed they have relooked at it. They are satisfied that it is a proper balance. Clause 28 and 29, no amendments required. Over onto the next page. Up until clause 30, this is where we get into the tribunal. Yeah. I have indicated that it's flagged. The overarching decision was we will retain the copyright tribunal and simply add powers. So there will be a lot of changes to the bill in this regard. But what we will keep in mind is, depending on what we add to the copyright tribunal, there may be a need to advertise. It just depends how far we go, how much we differ from the current bill. Then there's probably a number of things that we skip. The next page, up until section 29P, that was a question of indigence and legal aid and so on, and it was pointed out to the committee that the Legal Aid South Africa Act Regulation 11 actually excludes administrative tribunals. So, and DGI was in any event of the view it is something that could be dealt with outside of the bill. They take cognizance of the fact that we need to assist people financially, but this could perhaps be something that you add as the powers of the tribunal, maybe the ability of them for them to provide assistance free of charge and so on. Clause 34, dealing with regulations, there were no issues there. Clause 35, there was a bit of a concern here about if we say that you can't contract yourself out of the protection of the Act, why do we then allow a settlement or a license to contract you out of the protection? And the DGI has indicated, no, let's rather delete those two paragraphs because we don't want you to be able to contract yourself out of the protection of the Act. But then from there on, it is the technical wording of the schedules, just what the correct wording should be. So we're skipping quite a number of pages. This is exactly the same issue. Then we get to clause 36. Clause 37, no amendments required. Just once we get to the technical panel, they must just check for us that we have done the correct wording and phrases and so on. Clause 38, this is now the transitional provision that will deal with all those phrases of indigenous community and so on. So this is where we find that, clause 38.
Some of the issues that are just coming up here from staff, who, you know, sort of advised me as well, is that over a period of time, we have referred to Myberg sort of thing as being one of the technical experts. But in fact, there are a number of technical experts. We know that there's a panel, if I can put it that way. And are there some communication being made to the Secretariat? Is that, well, we hear you mentioning Myberg, but I'd also like to comment. I'm also part of the technical panel. And we need to, I believe, and I was just confirming, but according to my notes that I've made, we were only going to approach the technical panel as a team when we had finished. However, the reality is in the subcommittee, certain engagements were had with folks. I can't give you a list offhand. And I would imagine the same applies to DTI as well as to yourself, Advocate van der Merwe. So what I have just pointed out to the Secretariat is that anyone can write into the committee at any stage. There's no blockage. You can't write in. They have that prerogative. And then we can alert the committee to something that has come to our attention. So I think we need to look at it in that manner and not allow some technical experts whose noses may be out of joint to be dictating to us, because we give our people a lot of opportunity. All right, so anyone who writes in, yes, we're looking at it. But the decision is, let us complete this process. That's what we are going to do. Thank you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, maybe if I could just add on the technical panel issue, just to remind members that the technical panel was not intended to give policy advice. They're simply from a technical nature. Thank you, Chair. Then if I may proceed, the last couple of pages deals with issues that I did not put it on the previous matrix because we were focusing on the DGI's comments and aspects that came up exactly on the bill itself. But I think we are reaching a point where if we're going to advertise and members want certain things to be included, we need to consider these things now and okay them or not. So I'm not saying that we need to discuss them now, but just to highlight that at some point we need to look at them. If we need to draft wording for something, then we need to do that in this week. The first issue, and I know that this was an issue during the public hearings, my recollection in any event of members were that they were quite positive towards this being included, the issue of the panorama and the incidental use. It is something that makes sense. It is clearly a gap currently in the legislation. So we have some proposal there, some wording on the next page. The next issue was the private copy levy. Yesterday the committee discussed, we cannot go there, money bill, that's it. Then there were just a couple of other things that were mentioned. a public lending right, so that is similar to an artist's resale right, but it is about books being kept in a library, and then government will pay. We need to keep in mind this will include money, so there will be a cost to government. When we look at these things, I want to remind members that the committee can, of course, include anything in this bill. But we need to keep in mind, and as we did with the credit amendment bill, if we add something that the impact has not been considered, then we might be legislating something that has a bigger impact, a negative impact perhaps even, than what the committee intended. So it is any new clause that is proposed is always by any committee considered, yes, but carefully so. So like I said, this public lending right will be a cost to the state. So it is just something to keep in mind. Should we decide to go for this, there might be, there will be a cost to the state on that. It has been indicated that there are 31 countries who in fact have embraced this public lending right. Then the other thing that was brought up was a remix exception for, so it is not something for commercial and non-commercial. This is where certain works are put together. What the public was saying is it could fit under the exception of cartoon, parody, satire, and so on, but not all will fit in there. On the other hand, the way that the system is now opened up, as long as it is fair use, this should be covered. But like I say, the public were of the view, the person to propose, that there might be some that aren't covered. So that is perhaps something that could be considered. Term of sound recordings. There was just a request for it to be extended to 70 years. They were saying that it's an international standard. It's consistent with modernizing the aims of the bill. Producers will be able to continue offering recorders to local consumers in an updated and restored format. The longer term would support the development of the industry. Again, it sounds very good, but we must remember there might be an impact that we have not considered. Then text and data mining provisions, adding that as exceptions. This is also something, the list that I presented yesterday from Professor Sconbeter included text and data mining provisions to be added as exceptions. So that is perhaps something. And the last one is to remove, the second last one is to remove perpetual copyright on unpublished works. Again, we need to consider the impact. It sounds very good so that you can have access to perhaps someone who has passed away hundreds of years ago, but a diary surfaces so that there can be access to that. That is something, but there might be an impact that we don't know of. And then the last one is the reciprocity issue from what the DTI proposed yesterday in respect of collecting societies, and that is where they are sourcing a legal opinion. So, Chair, that's now a mouthful, and I've tried to do it as quickly as possible so that I don't waste time, but members have a broad view of where we are.
It gives us a broad view there, and we need to make, in terms of the way forward, three decisions, keeping in mind that we've already yesterday, and we took the decision that we would deal in depth with the tribunal today, clause by clause. That's what was left off yesterday, and the DTI were coming back to us. And I still think that that's a good idea. Let's keep on track. Let's complete that process. On the other hand, we've had a very broad and quick overview and something like, 35 minutes or so, and there have been, we've been able to look at that alongside the single sheet which was provided. I'm not sure who drew this up, yourself, Advocate van der Merwe. And then I think everything you've referred to in terms of the advertisement is noted here, which makes for easier reference, all right? And then once we would have done the tribunal, we would then tackle some of these areas where it comes back and it talks about the committee would need to take a decision here and so on. because there may be areas that we would initially flag in tribunal and say we'll come back to, and then all of those we would deal with at the same time. So I'm putting it to you that we accept what we've just heard. It's just refreshed our memories as to where we are, and we complete the work we started yesterday. That is the tribunal. And DTI, I think, are ready. We do have the overhead here in front of us, do we not? Is that right? Is this the right one? Yes, thank you, Honourable Khadebe.
Let's say the advocate has dealt with the matrix, and we expect this presentation from the DTI, which deals with the, is going to deal with the flag issues. Is it not going to be wise to deal with that? Because immediately after we've heard what the advocate has said, let the DTI come with that, and then after that, then we go to a new thing, which is the tribunal, and then we know that this one will finish it off.
Please. I must say, I'm
under the impression this was the tribunal, because we were told yesterday we will be given. And I see what, having opened it, it's not the tribunal at all. Do we have the issues on the tribunal just as a matter of, but we just don't have it here. Right. So I just want to make sure of that, because we get on with this, but do we have the tribunal issues?
Chair, we do have the tribunal issues within the presentation.
Further on.
Yeah.
Okay, so then just a revision of what I said. This PowerPoint in front of us will deal with the same issues that the advocate has spoken to legally, and now we'll get the policy on that. Do we agree? And then we will lead on naturally into the tribunal issues, because we did not deal with them yesterday. Everyone's on the same page in this regard? Yes. And I just need to deal with some administrative matters, and I don't want to hold back the committee. I'm going to just take the secretary just outside here, and I'll ask Honourable Khadebe to take the floor. I don't want to hold us back, but we do have three important issues.
The floor will be taken where I'm sitting, Chief.
Morning, honourable members. Morning, colleagues from the DAC, from the and all the members present, and other stakeholders. What we are going to do today is to take you through some of the areas that have been flagged from yesterday, and also talk to the Copyright Tribunal and the collecting societies. I just want to also say that because of the manner at which we're working this week, if you find a typo, a full stop in the wrong place, anything like that, please bear with us. It's the conditions within which we're working under. And even the order of things, you may find that in certain slides, things are not where they could have been, but we'll contextualize everything. So I just wanted to say that so that we don't spend time saying, but why is this here, why is this not there? Okay. In terms of the, there is a, 6A is not on our presentation, but I wanted to talk to the issue of contractual freedom. I think in the document by the advocate, it's one of the, just it's 6A, it's on the second page of the flagged issues by the advocate. It talks about the one about the contractual, okay, concern raised on whether minimum content of the contract, I mean, content allows for contractual freedom. The reason why I want to talk to that is that it is, as a DTI, we believe that it is important that we do specify minimum content of the contract, and we do not think that it violates contractual freedom, because artists out there do not have knowledge about their rights, and if we don't guide them in terms of saying, when you have a contract, make sure that you read this fine print, make sure that certain things are in place, you know what royalties you are going to receive, you know what your exit, if you have a dispute, where to go. We need to guide. It's more of a developmental approach to ensure that our artists, they know what is expected of them when they look at a contract. Many of our people come from the very disadvantaged background, so they don't know contractual matters, and that's where their rights are given away. Hence, we have many of musicians who have done very well, but they've assigned most of their rights, and they did not even know. So if you know that a contract must have minimum requirements, these are the things that you should ask questions about. It saves you. So this is protection. So I would recommend that the minimum requirements, we don't water them down. Of course, they must not be imposed, but it's just for awareness, making sure that we know, the artists know what is expected of them. In terms of the resale royalty rights, where we suggested that the rate be fixed, it's 7B, clause 7, section 7B. The wording that we are proposing is that the minister may, by notice in the Gazette, increase the rate prescribed in terms of paragraph A from time to time.
Yeah, also, you see, I thought it's because I've just walked in. What are we working from? What's overhead?
We are on the presentation, Chair. Presentation, yeah.
And page what? Let's see, page 6. Page 6. Is that right? Yes. Are we all on the same page? Right.
Chair, what we have done, we have retained the presentation, but the issues that have been dealt with, we won't be going through them. We are just going to go to areas which were highlighted by the advocate. So for now, page 6, which talks to the wording that we needed to propose for the rate, the fixed rate. So if you look at the last column, we are just proposing the word, the clause, for the rate and when the rate will be prescribed. So we are saying that the minister may, by notice in the Gazette, increase the rate prescribed in terms of paragraph A from time to time. So it's just to introduce the rate and when the rate can be imposed. Okay. And then I'm going to skip the other sections. Okay. 11 is, I'll talk to it, the ordering of the slides is a bit of a, but let me go to the penalties.
Just give us the page, it'll be very
okay.
Quick.
Okay. On 11, on the log sheet, now we're going to page 30. Apologies, Chair, the order of the slides needed to be reworked a bit.
No, don't worry.
Okay. On 30, it's 30, 30, 30. The issue of the penalties came when we talked about the log sheets, and we were requested to come up with a benchmark or to indicate how other countries deal with the penalties and the infringements, and the input was also made that we have penalties for non-compliance and for infringement. So we're trying to check what we looked at Singapore and the United States to see what they have, and on that table is how they put their penalties and infringements. We could not find one the penalties for non-compliance, but we found for infringement. And for example, in Singapore, they have fines and imprisonment depending on the type of infringement. For example, sale of infringing copies, which is $10,000 per infringing copy, the possession or importation of infringing copies for commercial purposes, and then imprisonment for 5 years. And in the United States, what we have there is that the civil copyright infringement may be ordered to pay damages that are not less than $750 and not more than $30,000. And the criminal penalty is imprisonment for up to 5 years and $250,000. So you can see that they are quite hefty. And we have to also look at then how then do we apply this into our own context. And we proposed that amendment of Section 27 of the legislation, that is in slide 32, page 32, on this one, what we are proposing is that a person convicted of an offense under this section shall be liable to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years, or to both a fine and such imprisonment, or if the convicted person is not a natural person, to a fine not exceeding 10% of turnover. So we propose the 10% of annual turnover and a minimum period of 5 years imprisonment.
You know, I'm smiling because it always amuses me, this phrase about if a person is not a natural person. Well, I suppose it will take care of the robots eventually, yeah, or the cobots. Right, okay. I mean, apart from the juristic issue. Yes, Honourable Hadim.
Chairperson, I think this crafting has gone a long way in addressing the issues which we spoke about. But this issue of the turnover does not indicate whether it is for a division or for a group, or if it's a group of SABC, got Metro, got all those things there. But then, on the issue, just before we even move away from that, we know that there's this thing which is known as constructive bookkeeping, whereby you can ensure that you can have a serial offender in a particular way, but ensure that the books show that they're actually running the losses instead of the turnover. So how do we deal with that?
It reminds me of people saying, you know, you get some operations, they have two sets of books.
Yeah.
One for the tax man and one for whoever you're going to sell your business to. So it's that kind of creative approach to bookkeeping or accounting. But the main thing here, which was on the table yesterday, you will recall, because the Honourable Kachalia, you also raised your differences on the subject, and that is the ANC was putting forward, no, it's 10% of the group, the turnover. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And you then said, no, a division, and you gave your examples. Now, we're not going to keep on flagging issues. We're going to resolve them now. So is everyone on board, your colleague alongside you, Honourable Kachalia? I certainly know Honourable Buyani is fully on board. So let's just have some discussion there. Let's first of all say, is it going to be a fine not exceeding? Is that what we want? In other words, that's going to be the maximum fine. Is that what we're saying? It'll be a maximum of 10%. That's the first thing we want to settle on. Honourable MacPherson?
So in essence, the court could decide 5% if they wanted to.
Well, it could, according to
the
that's
going to
be a maximum.
That's the decision I want. Do you agree or don't you, Honourable Khadebe?
Chairperson, I think that the issue of 10% must be the minimum. The serious aspect is the issue of the prison term. That's why we can say up to or not exceeding 5 years. Because the issue of prison term is the most serious one.
Yeah.
I think that one will also go to a serial offender.
Yeah.
But the issue of the initial breach of this, they must know, because when this thing becomes law, all these guys must go and run their ducks properly and ensure that there are people whom they assign to monitor that they are doing things right.
So essentially then you are saying that it must be a minimum of 10%. Right, Honourable Kachalia?
Chair, the DTI has done as we asked and come back on with the matrix here at, with the examples of Singapore and the United States, and we are prepared to be guided by international best practice in this regard. And international best practice, which we should be following, says that the imprisonment up to 5 years in the case of Singapore and criminal penalties in the US for up to 5 years. Then they both state a fixed amount. We are saying a percentage of turnover. Now, if we are going to say a percentage of turnover and international best practice is a fixed amount, then we need to ensure that we are in reasonable sync with best practice. So are we going to say, on what minimum of 10% or as a knee-jerk reaction, I don't know. My view is let's be guided by two cogent examples, one which we are following in terms of loosely, in terms which is Singapore, and the other one is the U.S., which is a leader in many ways in this area. So let's not reinvent the wheel here. This makes sense to me.
Your view would be no problem. You agree on the 5 years issue. We don't, up to the prison sentence. You have a different point of view, informed by best practice in the two countries mentioned. Honourable McPherson.
Thank you very much. I think the problem with starting to put percentages like this is. Who goes and determines, what the annual turnover of a community radio station is? I mean, I'm not sure. I think the reason why the Honourable Kachalia has cited, those specific things is that it doesn't become a burdensome case of trying to determine these things, and the court then has the ability to issue a minimum or maximum fine as a whole amount. I think that it would be more sensible to do something like that. However, I want to raise another issue, and I want to relate it to another bill, which hasn't come here yet, but it was a submission I had made to the DTI, that actually what is more precious to companies is licenses in which to operate. So as an example, if you really wanted to, incentivize someone not to misbehave, well, make it conditional of their license. And if they strike out three times, their license to broadcast or license to sell liquor, whatever, is affected. Now, I would think that a greater deterrent to this is to say that if you are a habitual offender, that your broadcasting license would then, in fact, actually cease to exist for 5 years. Now there's a very strong deterrent for someone not to disobey the law, and that's something that I would actually like us to look at.
Thank you very much, Honourable McPherson. You've raised another way that a sort of a stick or carrot, if you like, it could be seen as both a stick and a carrot. So thank you for that input there, Honourable Buyani, and then I will take Honourable Khadebe.
Chair, thanks. I think the one of a financial statement will be able to assist us, because the 10% of turnover will be able to be verified by the statement as to how much that he received and how much must pay. That one is key. And
It's not about always you must have best practice from someone else. You must invent as well.
Yeah.
Ourselves in South Africa, because this was invented by South Africans, and the 10% will make us good. And also the 5-year imprisonment. Thanks, Chairperson.
Right. There was something put forward by the Honourable MacPherson also, but let me get your point, Honourable Hadebe.
Chairperson, I think this issue of strikes is also a new element which I think is good. Yeah. But the issue of strikes then, but we must look what we are dealing with here. If these guys don't comply, someone is going to get hungry somewhere. Why give them the leeway of having the test track before you remove the license? Yeah. So the issue here, Chair, I stick with this issue of 10% of the turnover. Because even if it's a community radio station, it must report annually. Where do they report? What is MTTA? Yeah, SARS, even the MTTA. That's why they have to report as community radio stations. Annually, they have to report their income. So we will know how much they get. So the issue of 10% is a good deterrent, because why a person makes a wrong move, the very first wrong move, he feels it on his or her bottom line. And then he knows that those people who are supposed to benefit then have to get that. But the issue of strikes 3 times is also innovative. It's one innovation which can be added. But then the issue of the 10% turnover, I think, that's the best.
I just want to remind members before we keep on engaging, we have just also heard from the advocate Van der Merwe. You know, you've just got this. And there are comments, and you know, she has crafted certain issues for us. Unfortunately, the pages aren't numbered, but it's 9A, section 27. Is that right? 9A, and it's referring broadly to offences and penalties, all right, with respect to log sheets. And we just heard that, and it seems to be between the two points of view here, because it talks about, in the case of a first conviction, and all of us were saying, well, if it's a first offender, one could look at it this way, but if, as you put it, Honourable Kadebe, if it's a serial offender, we've got to go harder. And I wonder if you look at this, it does say in the first case to a fine not exceeding 5,000 rand. That's the first case. Is that the current act? Where's the new one? This one? All right. It's just take the brackets out. You see, take to a fine or to an imprisonment for a period not exceeding 3 years, or to both such fine and such imprisonment for each article, this is the thing, to which the offence relates, not the one but to each, or if the convicted person is not a natural person, to a fine not exceeding 5% of its annual turnover, or 5,000, whichever is the greater. Now, that was put forward on the lines of where we went, I think, with the National Credit Amendment Act. Then there's a B, all right, and I'm just getting the assistance of Ms. Sheldon here. In any other case, to a fine or to imprisonment, but then we say not exceeding 10,000 rand could be inserted. Not exceeding. That's what's in the current act, so this is not new. I want to look at advocate. This is currently in the act. We haven't put it there. Let's get this clear. We never put it there. It is there, not exceeding 10,000 rand, or to an imprisonment or both. So if we take that into account, remember the current act says not exceeding 10,000, and also talks about in a prison sentence. Now, we need to take a decision. is our decision that this is not working and the way to make it work is to make it stronger, or what is our approach? I'll take you, Honourable Kachalia, and then I'll take the ANC position. Honourable Kachalia?
The reason, Chair, that I suggest that we follow best practice, and best practice, and also with regard to our existing practice and our existing law, is that they, for clearly cogent reasons, they have decided to put a fixed amount in. Now, the purpose surely here is to, and I agree with everybody, and I'm sure everyone in this room agrees, that we want to ensure compliance. However, what we do not want to do is set in place certain actions which will result in unintended consequences which we haven't contemplated. And that may, what certainly one of those that we should be upfront is about, is that we are dealing with an industry here. Now, we don't want to be punitive to the point where we actually cause people to go out of business, because that will harm the very people we're trying to protect who make a living off this. So we have to understand, we want them to comply, and we want to make sure that there's a prison deterrent, but we don't want to make sure, and there must be a reason that our existing legislation and the case of Singapore and the United States have taken a view which is different to the one that is posited here by my colleagues. Now let's understand it and come to some sensible agreement.
Right.
Look, let's try and make some constructive progress here. I want to see some form of convergence. I would say I want to first listen to what Honourable Hadebe is saying before I complete that sentence.
Thank you, Chair. I think where there's convergence here is for the serial offender going to prison up to 5 years.
Yeah,
I think it is agreed upon. It's agreed upon. And then number two, Chair, is that this issue of a fixed amount, which was put, it was there before, and where we're seated now, the people are hungry. They are not. This provision didn't protect them. This provision didn't protect them. That's why then we have to strengthen the law so that we ensure compliance. Whoever wants to invest anywhere in the world, before you can go and invest, let's suppose invest in South Korea, the first thing you should do, you study the laws which are going to affect your business. That's the starting point. That's how you do, because you do what is known as, you know, in operation management, they call it TOES matrix. In strategic management, they call it the SWOT analysis, whatever it might be. You do that before you go and invest in anything. So if we put that thing into the law, anyone who comes into our country, we know that who are suffering. It is the indigenous of South Africa who have been suffering all these years. So there is no other person to protect them except the government of South Africa. So part of doing that is to come with the laws. So the issue of minimum, this thing of 10%, that's why we disagree.
Yeah.
I prefer this wording of DTI, but instead of up to 10%, must be explicit, minimum 10%. Minimum 10%, but the word must go out there. You know the industry meets regularly. Immediately after we've done this bill, I expect the industry which is affected by this will go into a session or a post-parat and see how they can comply with. That's part of their responsibility, Chairperson.
Right.
So we cannot, we know what we're protecting here. Umparayana khate. Had a lot of music which was out there, which was exploited, and these children are not benefiting from that.
You see what I think we should also take account of? This, the principal act in which this initial crafting was done here, all right, which we've just read out, the initial, that principal act was passed in 1992. No? That decision, that one, that aspect of it, 1992. Now, why am I mentioning that? Anyone who's handled a budget, not even an economist, knows exactly what 10,000 bought you in 1992 and what it will buy you now. What is the buying power? You see, no, you know, I mean, it's, And that is the problem when you put in fixed amounts, is that you put in a fixed amount, and depending on the volatility of your currency, etc., this could be all over the show. You know, the economy could crash, then you're looking at another situation. The economy could improve, it's this. So I think we've got to take that into account apart from anything else. But I just ask you to consider that as you go forward. Honourable Charlie, I do want to just complete,
just
but carry on.
Just to say that you raise a cogent point, Chair, but there's wording that could deal with that in terms of indexing to inflation. Simple.
Yes. You know, as an economist, I hear you very, very well. But we come back to the principal problem that is leading to the differences of opinion here. There are two positions, clear positions. The one position we all agree we want compliance. That's one thing we're agreed on. The prison sentence is out of the way. So now what we're looking at are these fines, which would be encourage compliance, and there was a further point for encouragement, holding the license like a sword of Damocles. If you carry on, you'll lose your license, and we could factor that point in as well. But let us just complete this amount. And I see, I'm lucky I've got Miss Sheldon here. She says someone on the left. Is it yourself, Mr. Petrie? Thank you.
Chair, I just think we need to clarify between an infringement and non-compliance with certain statutory requirements. If we are dealing with an infringement, we are dealing with a situation whereby somebody might even sell another person's copyright works and make money. Okay. But non-compliance, most of the time you are not making money, just that you are not complying with the rules of the game. But if we are dealing with infringement, we have to be very clear to say this person is making money at the expense of somebody's protected works. Therefore, punitive measures should be directed at infringement. Thank you, Chair.
Right, let's just get this clear. It would seem that the log sheets are about non-compliance, but I hope our understanding here is correct. Is that so? Yes. Now, and then you've said infringement is serious. You're making money out of it. Non-compliance is someone is not benefiting from something they should be benefiting. Isn't that so? The log sheet. You'd get a royalty from that, wouldn't you, or some sort of benefit? Am I, Mr. Petrie?
Yeah, I'm saying in case of non-compliance, it's not always the case that you are making money. It's just that you're not doing things in accordance with the rules.
But let me put this to you.
I am a collector, or I am playing your music. I get that benefit through increased advertising because people like that song. So you're able to attract more advertisement, more listenership, more whatever, more sales. So you're right, I'm not selling it. I'm simply playing it. But I'm getting that benefit, and I don't pass on the legitimate benefit as agreed through the log sheet, your music. So you're quite right, I'm not selling it physically, but I'm benefiting financially, surely. I hear that what your difference is in non-compliance, but I see we've got a legal crafty here, and I don't, you know, because if I don't see you that often, I don't always remember your names.
Pregoria.
That's the first name, yes, but I'm sorry, I just don't have your surname at the top of my head.
It's Mawaso Mwango. Thank you, Chair. You're correct in your analysis. Non-compliance will be like in the case of a log sheet. The requirement is you must keep a log sheet. But if you don't keep it, then you're non-compliant. However, Section 27 does stipulate the offenses.
if maybe you make for sale a protected work without the authority of the owner, that's an infringement. If, for example, you distribute for purposes of trade, I'm just making an example, that is an infringement, and therefore it qualifies for you to pay up for it. So that's where these provisions come in, for an infringement. But non-compliance, you're correct. If you don't play by the rules, you're supposed to be keeping a log sheet or reporting, and you're not, then you're not compliant.
Yes, I want to thank CIPC and DTR for the explanations, but it seems you are simply arousing more concerns. Honourable Khadebe, Honourable Kachali.
Chairperson, I fully understand what the CICP and the data drafter are saying. Infringement is like selling something which does not belong to you, which is stealing. And then when you're stealing, you belong to jail. That's the bottom line. Let's go to this non-compliance. This non-compliance, you don't keep a log sheet. If you don't keep a log sheet, someone is not going to get the money which is due to him or her. It's stealing from that person. It's also stealing, because someone who was supposed to benefit to get that money, you have taken it away from them. That's what I emphasize here, even in my constituency. I tell them, if someone does not come and remove a dustbin during that week, you must know that out of that, someone has stolen from you. That's how I take this serious. You must know if you are paying, let's say, 10 rand per month for removal of dustbin, you must know that that dustbin must be removed 4 times a month. You must know that if it was not removed on that day, 2 rand piece of yours is gone. Someone has stolen it, because it's going to earn a salary for that. So here too, if the log sheet is not kept, someone is going to lose an income. So we are stealing from that person, and stealing is stealing, Chair. That's the bottom line.
It does remind one of pay, of records of pay that a company must keep.
Yes.
You are required by the law to keep those records. If you don't, yes, that's non-compliance. But it could lead to a very serious situation of someone not being paid. Same for tax. Don't comply with tax, you hit with a sledgehammer. So there are fine points for tax, I notice, between infringement and non-compliance. It seems to be equally heavy. But I don't want to muddy the waters. I'm just simply saying I think in some cases, if not all, non-compliance can lead to the deprivation of an income. That's the point I'm trying to make. I'm not saying, it's put in another way by the Honourable Khadebe, that deprivation amounts to stealing. So, you see, Honourable Kachalia, if one could persuade you, I would say the prison sentence is out of the way here. We're looking at this issue of what will the fine be? Isn't that it? Right, can I ask you to come in, and then we'll come back once more to DTR before the committee will take a decision.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, CIPC, Mr. Fitcher, for your intervention here, and the legal, Ms. Mavaso, for your intervention. I think that difference between compliance and infringement is crucial. The Chair raised the issue of not wanting to muddy the waters about tax issues. Tax makes a difference between evasion and avoidance. One is legal, one is illegal. One is not legal, one is non-compliance and can be dealt with, the other is illegal, and there are strict punishments for that. Where someone doesn't comply with something, that compliance can be remedied, and that person can be held accountable to pay that money back with interest and God knows what. So you can deal with those things. To make this a cumulative, punitive, go to jail, do not pass go, do not collect 200, is a bit crazy in my view. Let's understand what is being said here.
And I want us to try and stay within the confines of what can I call it, cogent argument here. Yes. Now, I heard this word cogent said so often, but now I want to just get the last comment from staff and from DTI. DDG, followed by Advocate Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Chair, I think that the log sheet brought up the issue of the penalties and the offences, but this is about the entire legislation. And if you look at the copyright-based industries, there is a massive income and economic spin-off that happens in this industry. And 5,000, 10,000 are very minimal amounts. Someone can steal a song, and that song brings millions. So if you take 5 million versus 5,000, if what I stole is equivalent of 5 million and I'm supposed to pay 5,000, the balance is not equal. So I would say that, Chair, we should take this very seriously. In fact, even imprisonment is not far off, because even examples of benchmarks, they are showing that imprisonment is also allowed. We might maybe not say 5 years, maybe 3 years, but this will also bring caution. If you make it in a very serious punitive element, we are going to reduce a lot of abuses in the industry.
Yes, I'm just consulting some couple of points here myself from the Principal Act, and also looking at what we've done. If just one moment. Yeah. Some of these things were actually put there in 1984. Oh God, what was that amount, 10,000 worth then? But anyway, Advocate Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I might not be adding to the problem, but if we have this concern about infringement, because currently the offences that the Act provide for are all infringements of copyright. None of them are non-compliance of the Act. The log sheets will be non-compliance of the Act. Now, nothing stops us from having a specific subsection that applies to the non-compliance. So we can have a sentence for non-compliance, and we can have a different sentence for the infringement, the currents. So in other words, if we say, if you don't comply, you don't do your log sheets, then we have... And we can start off first offender, 10% of your turnover. That is possible. For the infringement, what the Act currently provides the first offender and the serial offenders. But we must just keep in mind that if we do split it like that, DTI has said that even for infringement, the current penalties are not sufficient. So that we must just keep in mind. Maybe we want to say on the infringement part, then that is perhaps where we can look, because the example that the DTI gave us on their slide, city, is for infringement, not for non-compliance. It's a different. I think we must just keep in mind that we don't compare pears and apples. The slide city is infringement, and that is where it was a specific amount per article, whereas the non-compliance is you are doing something that's illegal, and that is where you probably won't have it per article, because it won't be, that would be quite nice if we say for every song that you don't write in you can be given 10% of your turnover, but that might become very, very, very steep, especially if it is a minimum fine. So in fact, I would recommend that we split the penalties, so that the non-compliance is a different penalty, and that it's not per article but per event. And then we need to just look at the yes, and then rather the infringement we then look at, and it could still be a percentage. One thing that even in my matrix that I've left out, and I've realized it now, is that we don't give how annual turnover must be established, whereas we did it with the Credit Act. We do have how annual turnover must be established, so we can make that just very, very clear. But so even on the infringement, we can have the 10% or 5% or whatever for first offender, but we can also look at that and maybe have a specific amount. The other thing that I need to point out to members is that It's specifically for what Mrs. Faust mentioned about 10,000 rand today being a huge amount and 50 years being, you can't even buy toffee with it. The point is that how justice is currently drafting their criminal legislation is that they don't put a fine in at all. They simply say 5 years, 3 years, 10 years, and then there is an Adjustment of Fines Act that indicates if it is 5 years in an act, then that equates to, I think it's about per year, it's about 20,000, something like that. So that then allows, so for instance, at this point in time, if it is 1 year equals 5,000 rand, in 10 years' time they will adjust that act, and in 10 years' time 1 year might equal 100,000.
But effectively a percentage is probably the most reliable. It overcomes the financial challenges you have with volatility in money. So I would certainly want to persuade whatever we decide in the end that we retain not a fixed amount, but a percentage in reference to that. So if we, let's leave the years out of it because it seems that the prison sentence is more or less agreed to. But let us just look at this issue of the fine, and I'm saying, no, let's move with percentage here. And what was crafted for us was to a fine not exceeding, in other words, that 10% was the maximum. And there's a view that says that should be the minimum, or it need not be stated as a minimum or maximum. One can actually refer to 10% full stop. Now, looking at the legal people, if one doesn't say minimum or maximum and you simply say 10%, what is the connotation of that in the justice system?
There is actually penalties like that. I was concerned about whether we will be constitutional in making that a minimum sentence, so I quickly looked at the latest constitutional court case. And in fact, in that case, it was about drugs, and it is simply the fine is 10,000 rand per event, period. So the court will not have the discretion in making it less or more. It will be 10,000 rand. So if we just simply say to a fine of 10% of its annual turnover, that is what it will be. The one thing that I just want to point out, and again, I'm sorry for complicating things, the reason why the Credit Act added an amount is if a company's annual turnover is 50,000, then the 10% is 5,000. Whereas if the company's annual turnover is 5 million, then you start into what we want. So that is why in the Credit Act it was a million or 10%, whichever is the greater. But it is also then something where that was a maximum, not a minimum. So might want to think about that. But then on the other hand, 10% for a company who had 50,000 turnover might still be a lot for them. If a company is small, only had 50,000 turnover, then 5,000.
All right. I think what we'll do is I'm also looking at the time, a few minutes to 12 o'clock, etc. What we could do, I really don't think if I allow another 10 minutes, you're going to resolve it here. I don't. I think both positions are set, so I would rather deal with that after lunch. So we're not going to lunch now, but I'm saying let's deal with it after lunch. No, I think, look, let us, all right, should I put up a ring here, you know, with some, all right, look, I'm asking us to take off this issue clearly about the prison sentence, because we know we've agreed there, all right, all we're dealing with now is the fine. I don't need any preambles. I need substantive points.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the issue of the minimum 10% is still valid because we're still dealing with the deterrent here. Even that non-compliance, is a serious offence, Chair, because it's going to render some family, some child, without the food on the table. I think that one is serious. And then issue of the best practice, which was raised by the department, which is United States and Singapore. Yes, it's comparative, but what we have to look again at, Chair, is that which economies are running faster now as we're speaking. One of the economies is China. This one basically is now exceeding America as the best purchaser, is the best. How do they deal with this infringement there? And then you go to Saudi Arabia. It's one of the strongest. How do they deal with that? Can we have that thing again before Thursday, Chair? I really appreciate that one. You take this.
See this, but it is a serious issue we are dealing with. And we are required to be measured as well as to ensure people take legislation seriously. Honourable Kacharia?
Chair, I agree. We need to be measured. And deal with the issue of compliance and infringement, and the advocate has spoken to it. What I want to caution against is emotion that comes into this. Measured is right. You know, how much money someone makes by use of what they have contracted with you and paid you and agreed to pay you for has got nothing to do with how much money they make. If that's the issue, you should be arguing for more royalty. But having got it, you have an agreement, they pay. They do not pay because they haven't complied. You force them to pay. You force compliance. And you get your money. But to conflate this with how much, they can use it to make so much money, is an unnecessary conflation, but that's using very mild language. It is a faulty conflation, because they are entirely separate. So let's understand the issue. Let's hit them on the head, make them comply. Get the money in the right hands in the manner that they contracted. I want my piece of flesh, I contracted for it, I get it. If they infringe and do something unlawful in that regard, criminally liable, there's all sorts of penalties already available. But let's not be driven by this emotion that, they will make so much money from me, because that's nonsense. It doesn't make sense.
Honourable Kacharia, I wouldn't call it entirely a fallacious argument. The reason being, we all know how many, not all, but many large corporates work about certain infringements, whatever. They can budget for it. They budget for it. A smaller company doesn't have a hope in hell of budgeting for such a long, a serious number of infringements. So it does become pertinent to look at a situation and say, right, there are two companies, they both registered, they're both doing the same work, but this is a huge company and corporation and whatever, earning X. This is, some backyard community station. Its turnover is Y. Now, the same fine that would deter this community station won't necessarily encourage or deter a larger corporation. So in that respect, I think it is pertinent to look at something, a fine, which would be both an encouragement to comply, an encouragement, because the more fines you pay, the less profits you'll have. It impacts on your profits. Becomes an expenditure. So you need something that will deter or encourage compliance. Now, I look at the current situation that we've got. And this was raised yesterday by the Honourable Hadebi about the SABC or something. When it's heard that we're looking at this act, etc., it promptly started paying out royalties. Why? Why? I mean, why not before? When they suddenly realize, whoa, it's better to pay this little bit than the bigger one. So it's not purely the private sector, Honourable Kachalia. You're talking of many of companies or entities in various sectors, public, private, civil society, etc. But the bottom line is, and I know you want that as well, we do want the originators of whatever to benefit. We no longer want a situation where they don't even have the funds to beg for this to be done. And finally, many of them pass away before this act is even passed. So I know no one wants that. So I would like a final position from, we've only got two parties with us today. We'll have some, perhaps more, next week when the final decision is taken. But let us hear your position from the DA on this particular matter. Now, we're not talking of the prison sentence. We've agreed there. What are we talking about in respect of the fine? What should it be, Honourable Kachalia?
Chair, as you rightly say, we want to get people to pay these royalties that they've contracted for. So they need to be forced to comply with the mechanism that allows these royalties to be tabulated and computed, and then they must effect payment. If they do not do one, if they fudge and do not comply in terms of filling up a log sheet, there must be a penalty for that. If they then refuse to pay or to spin it out beyond a period of time or whatever the case may be, there must be penalties. These penalties, is our feeling, should be in line with what we asked the DTI to come up with the best practice, and we are presented with two that we are looking at, United States and Singapore. Singapore in particular, because we are modeling in large measure what we are doing here by agreement on the Singaporean model, which makes a fair bit of sense to everybody in terms of the hybrid solution which the ANC position is firmly behind. So we say yes. Now, if that's the case, and in line with my previous comments about not being excessively punitive and not being driven by emotion and not being saying that they will make so much money and so on, and let's fix on how we get them to pay the royalties. And yes, there's the issue of the prison sentence, and yes, there's a quantum which needs to be. And I would suggest that we go with the Singaporean example.
Yes, the Singaporean example talks about what amount?
The amount can be, and as you say quite correctly, that the amount is Singapore's inflation, a dollar 40 years ago would buy you much the same in Singapore. Fortunately, they have a very well-managed economy. We don't. So we need to build in inflation into that.
All right, DA is talking about, in terms of this particular fine and that's in this area, to use the Singaporean example, the ANC.
Chairperson, I think that, first of all, I'll say that the Singapore model here, in particular coming to inflation, is not going to work. Because when you look at this thing, Singapore is a city-state. It's a few people. The people who are having high standards of living, together for FAP does not compare with us. It does not compare when coming to the issue of the population. Yeah, when you come to South Africa here, you have the majority of the people who are living in poverty. You have the majority of the people who must be protected by the state. who must be protected by the state. Whereas when you speak about Singapore, you speak about the people who are wealthy. Majority of them are wealthy. Good point. They can defend themselves. They can take anyone. But on this side, that's why we're even thinking of putting something special for the tribunal on the issue of legal clinic for the tribunal. In Singapore, they don't need that. They can pay from their pocket. So there's a clear distinction between the two. Clear distinctions were on the African South Africa is a country, the African continent, which was exploited for many years, of which we have that redress. So the issue of even, I won't agree with the, even with our advocate, that we must separate this issue of infringement and non-compliance. Because one something, when we say as this committee, we are going to put the issue of the log sheets. If someone does not comply with that, be breaking the law, because the log sheet will be in the law of the country. So that one, you cannot say that we are breaking the law a little bit. There you are breaking the law. Where the issue that we are breaking the law, period. So the issue of that minimum the penalty of 10%, I think is valid. And then I think, as you said before, I don't think that we are going to reach a consensus with the aid, because I don't think we're going to, because we know who represented the ANC, the most vulnerable people. Thank you.
Right. Well, it certainly sounded like you were moving with the 10%, as it were, not a fixed amount. The only thing I'm not clear about is, were you talking of just 10% and then to ensure it complies or it's not kicked out because of, you know, the law is not reasonable, do we say a minimum or a maximum? You're required to indicate that. Is that what you were saying, Advocate van der Merwe, if you could just clarify that?
Thank you, Chief. No, I actually checked because I was concerned. But we can. We can say a maximum of, we can say a minimum of, or we can say 10.
All right. Now, exactly what are you using on a minimum of 10%. Now, that is the ANC position. The DA position is to pursue the Singaporean example. Right. We have not converged in this area, but I don't know if you were present, present Honourable TK, when it was an agreement that everyone was happy on the prison side of things. That wasn't the issue. But the issue became the fine. All right. So with half of this we have got a decision on and half we don't, and we have to come back to. All right? But we're going to move on. Yes, on Mr. Mbeba?
Thank you, Chairperson. I've listened to both the arguments, and I just want to appeal to this matter. And
just listen, all of us, because, you know, this is another department which with whom we don't frequently engage.
The issue of non-compliance is a serious matter, and I'm sure we are aware that the National Association of Broadcasters have been doing some games on these issues, and if we're talking needle time, 70% of income is not yet been paid, and if we're talking 70%, then we can ask ourselves as to what is happening to the right holders, and taking a decision on it, I think we really need to consider getting a legislation that is very, very, very powerful. There has been an argument through the NAB,
yeah,
on issues of the needle time pertaining to the SCA judgment. And understanding that, they were requested to pay the real time from 2006, And they've been saying that they want to pay little time from 2014 because of that judgment. You know, those differences, I think these are the issues that we need to be able to address. But since then, nothing has happened. And we're quite right that the SABC is starting to act now, simply because we have requested them to set a precedence. But then what about the other users? When are they going to pay? Unless if we're coming up with something that is very strong, then no one is going to. And it's only government that can protect our artists. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We often forget land is not the only emotional issue in our country. People's culture is. Honourable Pichalia.
Thank you for the input from Arts and Culture. It's so sensible and cogent input, and I think 70% is a worrying figure for all of us, and we're all aware of it. That's why we're sitting here, to ensure that we come up with something that will ensure this. Now, if I refer to the my colleague here on my left statement on Singapore, saying that they're full of rich people there, and that's why they can afford to do that. I just want to caution and put this into the pot so that people apply their minds. The reason they were oppressed, they were in Singapore, they had awful colonialism. The reason why Singapore people are rich today is because they instituted, they had institutions and legal systems and various remedies that allowed their economy to grow, and that's why their people are rich. That's why I don't willy-nilly say let's use them as best example, because they are the best example and they are entirely comparable to us, and we should be emulating to a degree what they are doing. That's why I say it, and that's what we should be aspiring to, not to necessarily hobble businesses in the use the example. It's wise. It has grown them. It has made them rich. We aspire as a people to be the same.
I hear your support for that Singaporean example, Honourable Hadebe.
Chairperson, the ANC will still be fair. We won't support that of the Singapore, simply because even if they are colonized, as I said, they are a city-state. The population is different. And number two, they were never divided into tribal groups which were exploited differently. That's why even if they are colonized, the level of colonization is not the same. It was not the same as it was here. So I think, Chair, we are firm here. Let's deal with that. Chair.
All right.
I'm not going to go down that street, as it were. I think the positions have been put forward by both sides, the different arguments. As I expect, if I start talking of colonization, we could be here a month. Now, I suggest we then just deal with the substantive issue on the table again here. But all of these things need to be taken into example. And I think the examples, I must thank, is a DTI. You have identified them. You've also referred to other countries that we can work on ourselves, including, I think you mentioned, Kenya, was it, and Nigeria, or a few others. But there it is. We weren't able to converge here. The ANC's position is firm here. And that will go forward for the moment until we come back to this issue, which we will do. It definitely will happen, but I don't think we need to take it to an advertisement, do we? I'm looking at the Advocate van der Merwe.
Chair, the issue of the offence of the logbook, as well as the adjustment of the fines, will have to be advertised.
Right.
Both of them on that. Right. So this will be opened up again to the public for comment, which should also be helpful in this area, I think. All right. Just keeping us on track here, I want to check with staff as to the status of the amended minutes, which should have been here on Tuesday. Yeah? we're back on track. In fact, we were working with the DTI here, so let's proceed, Dr. Masocha.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to request, I'm checking if everyone has got the draft 2 bill.
Yes, yes.
Okay. The reason why I'm talking to it is because we committed to bring a list to the committee meeting, the list showing the clauses that will be remaining in the bill and what possibly will not be considered in the bill. So we wanted just to show the list. Ideally, we could have brought it as in printed, but it would have been maybe wasting paper. So we thought, rather, let's work with the bill itself.
Yes, Honorable Tiako?
I think the request was for us to receive that list. However, the explanation as it is, we really need that list because it can't be that it's going to be presented to us without us having it. And what if it's changed somewhere? We don't know. We don't have any information in our disposal. So we can't accept that, Chair.
No, I think the principle in Parliament is that when it comes to legislation, there is no fruitless expenditure if we print. So let us just leave it there. It can be double-sided, which does save paper. But I know you were well-meaning. I mean, the trees around, we are having fewer and fewer with the excessive use of paper. Honourable Hadebe.
Chairperson, it's not that I'm not thinking earlier, but you said yesterday we've got a problem with IFA as Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
You said that we must restrict that. I think we must be...
Unfortunately, it's a bill. This is the thing. Yes. Right. Is there anyone here who can't access their emails in the committee? So everyone is able, and I know Honourable MacPherson can, so I don't even have to ask him. He can access that. Yeah. So will you please email through, if you're not sure what everyone's email is through, Ms. Naidu. Would that be all right?
Also, I shouldn't take them through the bill because it's exactly what's in the bill. But it's fine. We can email something during the day. Okay.
Yeah. Email it, but let us carry on. We're not stopping. Let's just proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. In the what we are proposing for the list starts on page. It's in the bill. Now we are. It's on page 16 of the bill. Page 16 of the bill.
Draft 2, and we're working from that, we may not need yet another draft. So I'm just looking at all of you. We certainly need it if it's going to assist us. But if we can do without it, let's see. Right.
Okay, so what we are proposing is that 12A, as it is, the whole of it remains, and 12A, the whole of 12A remains in the bill. The whole of 12B is on page 17. 12B in page 17 remains. And that goes up to
12A
and B.
Your proposal from DTI is to retain 12A on page 16.
Yes, and then...
And then to retain...
Then we go to... It's from all of them. So we retain everything from...
12A.
All of A, 12A, all of 12B.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
You see now, this is where some, but it's no use having that quiet murmur. Honourable Khadebe sounded like a heart.
Chairperson, I think from the presentation of the advocate, she presented that the J. Roman figure 1A with 1 will be removed.
and set and remain with two. So when you say just generally it's going to remain, then we're going to have a problem.
Okay.
Because we agreed with the advocate.
Okay.
And then we cannot start and unagree with.
And I think let's, if I may suggest, Dr. Masocha, there may be some, and you've been with us while Advocate has been going through, so you've made your own notes, I'm sure, that the 12A did seem to be what the Advocate was also suggesting to the committee as the parliamentary service officer. Let us never forget that. Not working for the department, but for Parliament. She is our support. All right? Now, when we got to 12B.
Chair, the 12B, the I there, I've noted it. And, yeah, it's noted. Okay.
You're agreeing that it's deleted. Yeah, we're agreeing that it's deleted.
Okay.
So let's make that note on this copy. Deleted.
Okay.
Right?
We go to 12C. And on 12C, we retain 12C.
As it is.
Then 12D. From page 20, 21, until
12D
is retained.
Roman 1, 2, 3, F, and G,
yeah,
you retain.
And then
page we're all okay. We're now on page 19. We've heard about the retaining.
So page 20.
But on page 19, I've got something here. I've got on page 19, J, Roman numeral 1. That's deleted. Then we move over the page. 2, 3, 4, 5. Arabic 6.
Okay.
Page 20.
Page 20. So we retained 12C. 12C retained. And 12D is retained. And then up.
Holding on. Whenever I see notes here and a cross, it worries me.
Okay.
The cross also fits hybrid model.
Yeah.
Right, I can hear you just reading my writing, which is not easy. Right, Honourable McPherson.
Chair, I must say it's very difficult to work in this manner when, you know, I don't actually have anything in writing from the department about what they're saying they're keeping or want to change. We're purely having a verbal discussion. And to be honest, we keep these to then refer back, you know, to update our position. And, you know, we're going through so much to try and actually recall all of this later is very difficult. So I really would ask that, we move on to something else, but until such time as we actually have this in writing from the department so we can actually reference it against the bill and see what we are actually looking at or what the actual rationale behind, you know, keeping something or changing it, it's very difficult to work in this manner.
Well, look, I do differ from you somewhat. And I'll tell you, I'm aware that Honourable Tiako has differed. You don't need to remind me. I have a very good memory. So now, you have supported her, but I am saying it is possible for us to work with draft one, because I have repeatedly asked members to make notes on this draft from day one that I've been back, and even last week. Please make notes. I've made notes. I know exactly whether it was the advocate who said something here, yourself, or whether it was indeed the DDG, DDG here. So we all make notes on the act. We should be. Where is your draft one? Yes, so where are your notes? I've got notes all over. Come on. We are continuing. Right. DDG.
Thank you, Chair. In on page 22,
I want you, as you're going, don't just jump the pages. 20, we've dealt with.
We've dealt with 20.
Page 21 at the top, because some of us have made our notes here. And that was C at the top of page 21, right? I see there was discussion on that, but an agreement.
Yes,
yes, I've noted an agreement.
No.
Thank
Honourable
you.
MacPherson?
Yeah, no, I don't know who's agreed to that, because we certainly didn't agree to that.
What would you disagree with? Because
I haven't got anything here.
I would have thought you would have written it in your notes.
No, because you didn't make any disagreement.
I actually
Honourable Kadebe?
Mr. President, to help your process go forward smoothly, this issue was engaged thoroughly.
Yes.
That's why I said that if the textbooks are not in the cadre, it made an example of a book from Russia, whereby the ruble and the exchange rate between the ruble and South Africa and the rand will determine what is going to be the price. And then the GTI came there. It didn't go there. It said just the market forces will determine that. I think that one was agreed upon. There's no one who disagreed with that.
Sorry, Chair, with respect, just because Mr. Hedebe made a point doesn't mean that that's what we agreed to. You know, he's the whip of the ANC, not the whip of the DA. Now, I very specifically had said that we had no understanding of what was considered to be reasonable, and, in fact, just because a work was not available for sale in the country does not mean was not in the country for sale does not mean that it is not available for sale in the country. Those are two very different points. And also, what we also said was I disagreed with the point that the market determines what you know what is comparable, because where it's open to abuse is to say, well, you know, we think that 1,000 rand for this book is comparable, or you know, is what it should be. But we actually think it's going to be 900. That is a purely subjective point and purely subjective decision that is open to interpretation. So you know, I don't think by any means that this point was agreed to. We specifically didn't agree to it, and we don't agree to it.
Well, I'm human. I may have made an error, but I've got here, after long deliberation, agreed to. So if you're saying that indeed I have captured it incorrectly, I will accept that, because I don't go forward on a bill when there's a dispute. I think it's wise not to, but to ensure that we're all retaining the same view. Now, if you can go back then, DDG, to, let's say, page 20, the bottom of the page. Do you see that there? Where we begin to address this issue. The right to make copies, etc., etc. And just, you've indicated to us now that you are, you know, in your the view of the department, this could be retained. Is that what you're saying? Can you give us the reason for it? But I also want to say, members, all of us are in and out. I've sometimes handed over the chair, and I don't recall what, you know, what has happened during that period. And there are many of us in and out of a discussion. DDG?
We have said, Chair, that we will retain this because when it comes to the determination of the prices on comparative work that is not available, that those prices will be determined by market forces.
So we thought that it suffices, because it does happen that copies are not available and they have to be, and they're not for sale in the Republic and they have to be obtained, but then the prices are always determined by market forces. We cannot, we don't know how else to respond to that in terms of the prices themselves. Yeah.
I hesitate to just give that an imprimatur, because we're talking about land at the moment, and as we're having a slightly different view. Honourable MacPherson?
The problem with how this reads, Ms. Masorcha, is that where authorised copies of the same edition of the textbook are not for sale in the Republic, it doesn't mean that they're not for sale at all. It just means they're not available in the country. So you can still obtain it. It just means that it's not available in the country at that particular point. Or cannot be obtained at a price reasonably related to that normally charged in the Republic for comparable works. So the book may be available overseas on Amazon or any other eBay, but because it is an original or a very in-depth research and may be expensive because of the research that's gone into it, someone may believe, well, that is not a reasonable price related to something that should be normally charged for comparable work in South Africa. Now, I think that is totally up to interpretation. And so a book actually may be available overseas, but not for sale in South Africa. And someone say, well, this may be comparable. Well, who's going to determine that it is comparable? And then who's going to then determine that it is reasonably priced in relation to the comparable work? Because you may have a journal that deals with a very specific issue that has no comparable work in South Africa. Then what do you do? So I think that this is way too open-ended and really needs to be tightened up.
I would hope that all of us would look at 12D itself, the reproduction for educational and academic activities. So we're looking at the purpose for which this is intended. Yeah. Reproduction, that's the heading here. And it explains exactly what it is, works, recordings, etc. And then it's dealing with the issue of copying here, provided that the copying of what we have just indicated, the purpose, does not exceed the extent justified by the purpose. Does not exceed that. So the purpose is research, or the purpose is X. You're not, at that moment, the first one is saying intending to copy the whole book, per se, under that one. The second one, it's indicated that the institutions may incorporate the copies here in electronic pack, course packs, etc. And we went into that. Then it refers to what I've just said. You're not told you can take that whole book and copy it initially here. Then says three, shall not incorporate the whole or substantially the whole book. And we then move down to four. So when can you make these copies? When would it be legal then to do this? And then it does indicate there that the right to make copies contemplated in that Section 1 does extend, which appears to be a contradiction but isn't, because it specifies the reproduction of the whole textbooks. Why would this be the case when it's out of print? Yes, I don't think anyone would argue about that. Where the owner of the right cannot be found. C, where the authorized, and this is the bone of contention, where the authorized copies of the same edition are not for sale in the country, or say in South Africa, or cannot, and I have really underlined that part, cannot be obtained at a price reasonably related to that normally charged in the Republic for comparable works. Now, We did, there were various points of view, just as we've discussed on the other one. In the end, though, we didn't have that sharp distinction as we've just experienced with the fine. We had various views expressed here, I've noted, but that there was a convergence. But as you say, I have misrecorded or noted that. You've now expressed your position again, which diverges from the ANC position. So I can only suggest, Honourable Mbeki, you are able to... you know, you see... I was thinking of the panel. What do they call that panel of? High-level peer panel or something. You also had a discussion for the African Union in this area. But let me ask Honourable Khadebe to please, you, Honourable MacPherson has put that final clarification, put yours on the table, and then we'll flag it.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I agree with Honourable MacPherson that I'm not a whip of the DA. But what is very important here is that the policy positions of the ANC are articulated without fear or favour against anyone. I think that one is the bottom line. Chair, yeah, as we agreed on the issue of the collecting societies, that the market forces will determine who lives or dies. Even here, Chair, we cannot complicate this thing. I think that the position which is put by the department, that the market forces will determine what is the reasonable price, I don't think there's any, we don't even need to put it that. We know that in the practical economic world, the market forces will determine what is going to be the price. Because if Amazon is going to be cheap, if someone else is going to be cheap, that's how it's going to be determined. So I think the department was correct. The market forces will determine that. Thank you.
I think the issue comes around a copy issue, because under Amazon you're talking of a purchase, shall I say, of the book, whereas this is a copy.
The market forces will determine that.
You have that final, but we are flagging
it, Honourable MacPherson. We are flagging that issue, so whether DTI retains it or not is not in question. No, we are moving on.
I suspect the Honourable Khadebe is actually not justified the position.
I will decide.
He's just said that we, you know, we revert to the department, and he just said, but we're going to let market forces determine. I mean, that is not a cogent answer to the substantive point that I had put on the table.
No, that.
Is elected by a committee, not deployed by the ANC or the DA or the EFF or the Freedom Front. It's an election by the members. And while I am still chairperson, it is me who will recognize whoever wishes to speak. I did not recognize you to speak, Honourable MacPherson. And I would like that clear. And if anyone wants to run to the speaker in writing, please do so. Yeah. But while I am chair, allow me to chair. When I infringe the rule book, report me. Thank you.
I'll have to start using this one so I can start switching people off.
Right, we can now, as I said, this issue is flagged. Right? Now, having flagged this issue,
I'm asking the assistant, the new assistant, is it Yvonne, did you bring the amended minutes? Hand them out to the members. I'm not sure if anyone sitting here now was not there when we did the amendments. Were we all there when these minutes were presented to us? And they were heavily amended, and we asked for them to be returned on Tuesday or Wednesday. Honourable Tiako?
Yeah, Chair, you are the chairperson of our committee. I really appreciate that. But the agenda itself doesn't speak anything about, we didn't amend it. We need to amend the agenda for us to entertain the minutes. So can you advise me on that?
Yes. When I opened the minutes, I said, not the minutes, the meeting, I actually said we need to finish the minutes that were amended when I opened the meeting. Honourable MacPherson?
I actually want to support the Honourable Teko's position. If you want to do the minutes, you would need to amend the agenda to reflect so. You cannot just say we're going to do it. You would have needed to amend the agenda when you'd opened the meeting.
That had sufficed in the opening because it has in the past. When you have raised issues, we've done the same and others. I'm not going to turn this into a debate. We've already wasted enough time. So if there are two people who disagree with the position on the table, let me not take this to a debate and a deliberation. I don't believe in wasting the committee's time. Right? Please remember, they will not be reissued. Bring them on Tuesday. They will not be reissued. If you don't have them on Tuesday, we will continue with the minutes. Right? DDG, will you continue?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in terms of, if we go to page 22, in... Okay. In terms of the hybrid, we were going to look at areas that would be included in the legislation for proposals, and what we are proposing here is to, it's on page 22.
Now what clause?
So what we are proposing is that we do not retain 19B, and we do not retain 19B, and we retain the issues of the library on 19C, which is on page 23.
All right. Let's just ensure that 19B goes to the bottom and over the page, and 19C.
The VTI is proposing. Yeah.
All right. It's our decision, but they're telling us what they would prefer. Right. And then 19C.
19C, which focuses on the libraries and the archives, museums, and galleries, we propose for retention to be retained. And all of it until we get to page 26.
I do have a note here which puzzles me.
Okay.
On page 24, B, well, it's 6, if a work or a copy of such work, with a question mark here, I haven't got anyone's name, the collection of a library, archive, etc., or gallery is incomplete. Such library, archive, etc. may make or procure a copy of the missing parts from another library, archive, museum or gallery. Now, I know now what that question mark is there for. I'm on page 24-6. Page 24-6. The top of the page. That's why I say let's not skip pages. And over there, the query I have is earlier on we've spoken of parts of a book being, you know, okay to copy that, and in other instances we've had specific instructions as to what we would do if a whole book would need to be copied. But here, as some of us may be aware, even in university libraries, certain readers and users have been very abusive with books, and sometimes you actually only have the hard cover with the index and a few other things. The rest of the book is not available. Now, we all know that. So when you say part of, would that, it said the missing parts, it could be construed to mean the entire, whatever is missing, I will copy it. So I wonder if we shouldn't make it very clear of the missing parts, even if this means the whole, the entire book. I don't know. But I'm just saying, do we simply mean this little part, that little part, or as you put it in plural, parts? So it was a query, not a disagreement. All right, so I should make that clear. I thought it should be clarified, but if the legal people here think it doesn't need to be, we'll live with that.
Thank you, Chair. And then we go to page 25. We retain, we propose to retain. And in page 26, we are looking at the exceptions for the protections of copyright for persons with disability.
Oh, yes.
And that is for retention. We retain, definitely retain. So, Chair, this is our list. This is, as far as the exceptions are concerned, this is the list that we wanted to propose or to bring to the attention of the committee. And we didn't want not to miss this opportunity because of the copy. So we are happy that you gave us permission to present that. Thank you.
All right. Now, that addresses the commitment that you gave us. Remember yesterday, was it, or the day before?
In addition, Honourable McPherson requested to indicate on those areas the works that will be affected, and we are committing that next week.
Are you listening, Honourable?
Yes, I'm looking at the screen.
Oh, good. But no, your head was actually down, that's why I'm asking.
My grandmother in the bloody... It's ridiculous.
No, it's not ridiculous. I know very often you are not
on the point of order, Chair. On the point of order, Chair. The language used, bloody grandmother, it cannot be right. It's not parliamentary.
No, it's what is called the Honourable MacPherson's lingo. Right, DDG? Honourable Tiako.
Can we request, may you respect the chair, Honourable McPherson, don't do dialogue when we're in the meeting. This is a meeting. This is our meeting. Please, we are requesting.
With respect, it's the chairperson who is running a dialogue.
Right. Right. Can we get back to the issue again?
Okay, thank you, Chair. What we were saying is that Honourable McPherson, you requested the works on those clauses that we were going through. So we are saying that next week we are going to provide you with the specifics of which works are affected by those proposals. Yeah.
When you say next week, we heard that you won't be here Wednesday because you have another commitment. And clearly there would be
I'm not sure if you're going to be here for the sugar one, because I think that another DDG will be here on Tuesday. So you will be here Thursday then. Right. It would be helpful if we could have that, though, emailed to the committee secretary on, say, Tuesday if possible, Wednesday at the latest, so that he can disseminate it to committee members. Thank you.
And then, Chair, you requested something about Microsoft. You asked about the Microsoft case. And as far as that case is concerned, it was Microsoft versus Moonbox in 2017, where Microsoft was awarded $1 million for copyright infringements by Moonbox software. So what Moonbox did, they sold more than 3,600 pirated product keys relating to 17 different Microsoft software products over the period of a year. And as part of the ruling, the federal court restrained Moonbox and its directors from infringing copyright in those products in the future. And it was found that the software company, it sold these unlawful products on its website. So this follows other infringement cases in which Microsoft was awarded damages. So there have been violations and infringements on the Microsoft products, and the courts have been ruling on that.
Right, thank you very much. Can we move? Okay, there's something else here at the top of page 28, which I've written in. Did DTI put this in? I haven't got any attachment yet. It's at the top of the page. And the work shall be governed by contracts, provided that in the absence of a valid contract, ownership shall vest in the person commissioning the work. And there's a question mark with written. Were we insisting that this should be in writing or what? Do you recall that? The discussion yesterday.
Yes, Chair. We had a discussion at length around the instance where there is no contract, in terms of what would, whether a written or a verbal contract still stands, and also the rights of the author versus that of the commissioning company. Although we didn't, the issue was flagged. It was not finalized, and today, what we as a department, what we are proposing, we have noted the proposal by advocates in terms of the wording around that in the instance of the lack of the contract. But we thought about it as well to say, if this area is going to be problematic and it requires further engagement, the different scenarios, for example, if you buy something on the road and you say to someone, do a sculpture for me. So the different dynamics probably have not been well tested yet. So we might propose that, Chair, we revert to the current legislation, the current act as it is, while this work might need to be done in future to just make sure that issues are addressed. It might have other implications that we have not foreseen.
Members, remember that long engagement
that we had on this? It was addressed by yourself also, Honourable Kachalia, among others, I think Honourable McPherson, Honourable Hadebe. So you are saying, as a department, what are we saying then? Perhaps that may also give the department some direction. You remember the discussion we had yesterday? And the department is proposing that we revert to the Principal Act and leave this clause out. I'm just saying, this is looking at the members themselves. You've heard what the department is saying, Honourable Kadebe.
Chairperson, although in my notes you indicated that we'll look for legal advice, legal opinion around that issue, I still maintain that before we can agree that we revert to the Principal Act, which is a safe measure, but then the issue of the legal opinion be sought as quickly as possible, so that before we deal with it next week, we should have heard that.
or other rights.
No, thank you very much. Yes, Mr. Mbiba.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to make an input, I noted when we deal with that section, we might also need to revert back to the resale rights, because when we're talking about visual arts, I would think that it's kind of like impacting on the resale rights. And already, when we talk about the resale rights, indicated clearly in the bill that they are not transferable. And when we talk, and our proposal to say this bill, when it addresses the question of commissioned work, the right holder should be the author. And obviously, as it is, right now, it was not addressing the question of the resale rights. So we need to read that in conjunction with the resale right as well.
All right, well, we will be getting the legal opinion, and that should help us take the matter forward. But thank you for your input, Mr. Mbiba. All right. So it's flagged there for legal opinion. All right. Do we all agree? Right. Let's move.
And the next one is on the clause 23, section 22. On this one, Chair, it's about the assignments of rights for the 25 years, and we were going to come up with the proposed wording on the clause to include the composers and publishers. And I would request Mr. Mabaso to just take us through that clause quickly, including those role players.
Right. Are you happy to proceed at this point, Ms. Mabaso, Mavungo?
Yes, Honourable Chair. We have updated the clause, and we'll have that made available to the advocate at the later stage, as she has requested earlier. Based on what the DDG has said, so the clause will read, it's not just cited, but will factor in the issue of a composer and a publisher. So it will read as follows: no assignment of copyright, by a publisher in literary work, or publisher and composer in musical work, and no exclusive license to do an act which is subject to copyright in such work shall have effect unless it is written and signed by or on behalf of the assigner. The licensor, or in the case of an exclusive sub-license, the exclusive sub-licensor, as stipulated in Schedule 2, provided that assignment of copyright in literary or musical work shall only be valid for a period of up to 25 years from the date of such assignment. So basically, we'll just, in literary work, only limited to a publisher, and in musical work to both publisher and composer.
Members, you can all see it in the, PowerPoint which they gave us. Mm-hmm. It's towards the front, and it's overhead as well. It's something, again, that we discussed at length. What is the view of members at this particular point? Hands? Any view?
Chair, I think from the presenter, she said she still has to refer to the advocate. I think let's give the advocate a chance to look at it before we have a final comment.
The advocate, not the DTI, then the advocate will be coming back on that. Yeah. Right.
And the next one, Chair, is Clause 24, Section 22A on the orphan work. What we will be doing with the advocate in the next week, we will be proposing a wording, Chair, on that one. We haven't done so.
Just go through that again, please.
Okay. On Clause 24, Section 22A, which is the assignment and licenses on orphan works, we talked to the process of identifying the works in the bill, and we have said that currently it's cumbersome and it requires clarity. And what we are proposing, Chair, is that we were supposed to come up with a wording for this clause. We will do so in the next week in collaboration with the advocate. Then we come to the issues around the collecting societies that we discussed yesterday. I'm going to just go. On the BEE, one of the areas that we were supposed to respond to was around the BEE requirements, ensuring that there is transformation when it comes to the collecting societies and they are inclusive. And I'm going to give a technical view from the CIPC. We discussed this at length, and they advised technically about how the collecting societies work. The BEE legislation is about empowerment, economic empowerment, and it's about ensuring transformation and inclusiveness from ownership, management, and different elements that it adheres to. Now, we are talking about non-profit organizations, and most of the stakeholders, the members, are mostly from the historically disadvantaged backgrounds. So what the recommendation here is that instead of making this area cumbersome, we do not have to require that the collecting societies, given the nature of the model of collecting societies, be expected to comply with the BEE requirements, because they are not a normal form of business. They are not making profits, they're not for profit, although they participate in the economy in a way, but they are not like your typical for-profit making company. So this might become a deterrent, even instead of empowering the collecting societies, requiring them to comply, to register the BE, the BE requirement might become a deterrent for them. So we thought we should flag that instead of just saying we will make it a criteria that they comply with the BE. But it's something that the committee can advise on going forward.
The question I would ask Advocate van der Merwe, the BBBEE, among other issues like company law, it's a law, it's a piece of legislation, it's an act. And one, as I understand it, all of us, natural people or natural persons, juristic persons or whatever, we all have to comply with the law of the country, broadly speaking. So unless we're exempted and the law specifically says these people are exempted for whatever reason. So I would take it that it would be overarching in any event. That would be my initial understanding. Honourable MacPherson?
Thank you. I'm just trying to understand what the original rationale for this was. Was it that a collecting society had to meet BBBEE requirements in order to be accredited as a collecting society? Because if that is the case, that is something that cannot be supported, because BEE legislation, I don't believe, can be applied in that manner. If the collecting society is a business that has a turnover that meets the thresholds of BEE legislation, then of course that is something that they should comply with should they choose to do so. But you cannot link accreditation with BEE requirements, and that I don't believe would be lawful.
I think you've got a point, Honourable MacPherson, but let me hear the Honourable Khadebe.
Chairperson, you know, these non-profit organizations are many. When we dealt with this thing, I made an example of one non-profit organization, CIFA. I made that example. How many billions of US dollars are passing there? It's a fact that somehow, if they were here in South Africa, they'll have to comply with their broad-based economic empowerment act. But here, I'll also agree with Honorable MacPherson that you cannot win. Let's see, if they're really representing, you cannot make it as a stumbling block. Because let's see, they are turned over, and then whether they qualify, and as we move forward, I think that's a fair comment coming from the start of the day.
I think the point that's referenced about the turnover is very pertinent. I don't know what that threshold is, but I know below a certain threshold, it's neither here nor there. So it would just be pertinent, I think, for the DDG to just look it up and just check whether this should be there. But I don't think we would want to, you know, impede emergent collecting or emerging collecting societies from registering and obtaining accreditation. That would appear to be what has been said here. Yes, Mr. Petchy?
Thank you very much. Maybe just to sell the model of a collecting society for the benefit of the members.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
In an ideal situation, a collective society should collect, pay its members, and retain its admin fee to run that business. And it should remain with a zero balance in its account. Therefore, it is not an ideal business to subject it to triple B, I submit.
Yeah, the very nature
of the business, as you put it. But, Honourable Khadebe?
Chairperson, the explanation is very good. But what happens if they retain the funds and then it accrue interest on the other side? Because that interest is still not going to the members. What happens in that situation?
But, Chair, that is something else. I'm just telling the motto of a collecting society. If they retain money, that means they are not running the administration properly, and there should be other mechanisms of correcting that.
Yeah, all right, Honourable Khadebe.
SAFSA has not paid for the previous 3 years. If we go into the fourth year now, imagine whatever money they are having in the bank account has accrued interest. I think that's the ideal situation which the CSP is speaking of. But we are billion. I think we come in by 2025 to amend it again. Let's address that scenario. What's going to happen then if they accrue that business? That's interesting. Yeah. But the issue of putting this thing as a stumbling block, we agree with that. Yeah. That one is agreed. Yeah. We cannot put this. Because even the project, we also have a threshold.
That's
right. When they turn over at this level, and then it kicks in.
Charlie, was that a hand?
I'm just saying that it's governed by law. I've just looked it up here. It's governed by law. I don't know why we're inventing the law. It's there. I refer you to an article by Shepston and Wiley, not an article, a paper by the law firm Shepston and Wiley on non-profit organizations and BBBE. We are governed by law.
Yeah, that's the point I made at the beginning, that if it's a law, well, we all have to respect the law. That's it. It's as simple as that. Unless there is a specific exemption. So let's move on in that vein. I'm looking at the CIPC as well to see if they're happy with how we're moving. You know, we're covering that territory.
And there was an issue that currently, Chair...
Can I just stop you there? Because I see from your PowerPoint, you've noted on the right, this would be one of the criteria for accreditation. Now, I'm understanding something a little bit different now, that we are saying, look, we don't want to impede accreditation. Am I right?
Yes.
That's the general view. So then we would take that out. Yes.
Honorable
Buyani?
I'm not so sure because, okay, you are agreeing in terms of the triple B, but what about transformation and also localization, because it's part of our requirement. Because here we're having some raw or some, it's from 1963, and if you check now, it's still in operation. We increment that as Parliament to say we must be governed by 1963 laws, and they are not even regulated by the CIPC. Well, what are we saying? Well, I'm not saying we must go back, but let us look at this issue because transformation and localization is very much key. Thanks, Chair.
But we have said that there should be a criteria for accreditation, but I don't think we've yet specified. From I'm looking at everyone who's been participating here, I don't recall specifying what should be in the criteria. Is that right? I'm looking at members now. I haven't made a note on that, but let me ask Honourable Khadebe and then other members.
Chairperson, on source 25, is criteria for
25?
Yeah. Yes, but that's in here, or in the Act, is it? Or yeah, the page,
did you say page
25? I don't know what page it is.
Of the bill?
Where it speaks about the three forms of accreditation, 50 or more copyright members, 50 or more. I think that's part of the criteria. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's part of the criteria which I don't know what it is.
Well, let us ask
the DTI and the advocate and CRPC to all look at that area, okay?
Chair, just to clarify, there is a criteria that the CRPC currently is using. The issue of the transformation came from the committee where we were requested to look at transformation, to incorporate, make sure that when we accredit, we take it into account. So we are saying that it may not be applicable given the model of how the collecting societies are, and as compared to other forms of businesses with turnover and the profit making and all those other considerations. Because it's a membership-based formation.
Right. You know, what puzzles me when I look at the members, there is no nodding or full agreement. There's more a sort of comme ci, comme ça, I don't know. And then that leaves me with no tick or cross. Honourable Khadebe, let's get a position.
Chairperson, as the DTI has said, the CICPC is dealing with those criteria, of which we agree with that. Even that the issue of transformation, I was not in when that thing was dealt with. It was, but now it looks like it's going to become an impediment. So we say that we agree with the Honourable President that let's hold it a little bit and see how we're going to move moving forward.
Just coming back to yourself, Honourable MacPherson, I'm sure you've heard what's been said. Could you just give us a comment here, please?
Again, I just don't believe that you can ask someone like a collecting society, which is a not-for-profit organisation, to adhere to a law that doesn't exist it was not applicable to them. I think that what the Honourable Hadebe says is correct, and that you want to make it, you know, less barrier to entry or less difficult for them so that they can actually just focus on doing their job.
All right. I think we're almost
on the point of leaving it then at that position, Honourable Hadebe.
Chairperson, is true. On that one of the BE, we're fine with that.
No.
But I want to go a little bit backwards on the issue of the membership, which I think, Chair, I wanted to put on record that what SAMPRA has done for the previous 3 years is not right. that it didn't pay the royalties because of an external problem. What I think that as part of the report to Parliament, as part of the report to Parliament, we must call that the minister must make a regulation so that there is regular payment. Because what I took, what the CSPC was saying, that there's something like an annual general meeting. In the annual general meeting, there'll be minutes, but part of the annual is put the financial statements in, of which part of it, as to prove that they are a non-profit organization, they must have a net of zero, whatever, because they would have distributed that. So what I'll come with, Chair, is that let us, not here in the bill, but as part of the report, that the minister must come urgently with the regulation that when an annual general meeting is held, it must also indicate how much was paid. So that if there's a problem with the local artist, the international artist must not be affected. If it's affecting the international artist, the local artist must not be. Reinforce those things. I think that one, Chair.
All right.
With with the passation of the membership. That one is not part of the bill, but we recommend that, as a report, that the minister must do it as of yesterday. Thank you, Chair.
Right, so that's certainly one of the criteria for accreditation, that there's a requirement that financial statements be provided, annual financial statements are there. I think that is normal in any registration with CRPC in any event. And you'd have to file something to tax, even though you're an MPC, non-profit organization. But that we do want that to be recorded, and the time, because as you pointed out, Mr. Petchy, there is no time deadline in the bill, in the Principal Act, indicating, this should be paid by or within so many days, and that also needs to be addressed in terms of the accreditation. I wouldn't regard that as a barrier to entry per se. So if members all agree on tightening that up within workable frameworks, etc., can we move from there?
Yes.
Right, okay. Let's move.
Chair, these other areas are not in the presentation, but I'll speak to them.
Yeah.
We are saying that those who are not currently accredited, the collecting societies, must be accredited. But we are also saying that there must be a transitional period for those who are not accredited to adjust to the accreditation. So we are not some time. We are not sure how long we should give, but we are proposing 18 months. 18 months for those who are not yet in the legislative framework, who are self-regulated, to prepare themselves to meet the requirements of accreditation.
We do need to give people space. You can't just impose something out the blue. Yeah, we agree? Yes? Let's move on.
There was a question about the other collecting societies, whether the existing framework addresses them. And CRPC will assist, but as far as I'm concerned, we have collecting societies for musical rights. Although DALRO is for publishers, it's under SAMRO, which is for music. I do not think that we are providing sufficiently for the artistic works and other works. So we may need to look at how to widen something in the legislation to make allowance for them. But CRPC will just clarify further if their understanding is that we do have sufficient provision in the bill.
Petchy?
Thank you, Chair. I think we said previously that in terms of the collecting societies that CRPC is regulating is only in the area of natural time. So DALRO is not under our regulatory framework. So, but the policy position of the department is to ensure that all the collecting societies are subjected to a regulatory framework.
David?
Chairperson, on that particular regard, I'll concur with the department that all the collecting societies must be regulated. they must be regulated because they are collecting money. They are collecting money from the citizens of South Africa, for that matter. So there must be regulations around them. So there must be no standalone, something of collective society which is not there, which does not account to anyone.
That point was made yesterday again. It's re-emphasized. All collecting societies should be registered first. Then they must also be accredited so that so that the regulations can apply. Are we all in agreement there? Yes.
Chair, also for the honourable member to assist about other collecting societies, like your publishers, the other sectors, should we maybe have to strengthen the bill, incorporate other forms of collecting societies?
Yeah.
You have your artistic works.
Oh,
the other sectors, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Members, we are going to lunch at 1:30, and I know that there were certain, apologies which are already accepted, so we won't go over. Let's just continue.
On the issue of the retention of the royalties, Chair, we propose that the period of retention be 3 years for the collecting societies to retain the royalties without payment for 3 years. Instead of 5, we are saying that it should be a shorter period within 3 years, while they cannot find the relevant for retaining royalties. I will request Mr. Bizet to assist me with this one. The issue of interest, we will address it separately. We will come back on that one. So, Daddy, can you talk to the issue of the retention of royalties, please?
Yeah, Chair, my view is that I think it will be fair and proper in the circumstances to even engage the collecting society and just get their view from administration point of view. I cannot just sit here and come up with an imposing statement. Maybe 3 years is not going to be viable from the administration point of view. I'm just suggesting that we can also invite the collecting society themselves just to advise the committee on whether it will cause some implementation challenge from their side.
Chair, what we will do when we come back, we will reflect on that. It's an area that needs to be addressed, but when we will flag it to bring it back to the committee next week, including the clarity on the issue of the interest where the royalties are retained.
Look, I just need to ask all the participants from the departmental side, the entities, the IPC, etc., to remind you, we're actually, the bill is closing off at this in this phase on Thursday, and we're not hanging over work. There's not going to be any, work hanging. We've really got to advertise. So I'm now a bit worried about so much coming back. This does worry me. And I think anything that's coming back should really, a lot of it should be with us on Tuesday, printed at least, so that we can manage, because we cannot go beyond that period, Thursday. As it is, we're meeting Thursday until 4, 4:30, and I'm thinking to accommodate all the sets of minutes, we better make it 5 o'clock, so that we cover everything then.
The members by extending the time.
Gently
when the time arrives.
They'll need to be informed before,
so flights aren't booked.
Let's get
clarity
between the two, CIFA and the TTI. What is it?
which they want to put in the
I don't know. This is what we have to clarify. I'm saying I'm just simply worried because there's so much now. Could you just clarify that, DDG?
Thank you, Chair. What we will do, we will have a brief discussion about it, and maybe after lunch we'll come back with more clarity. We'll bring more clarity after lunch. Yeah. We are mindful of the time pressures as well. Yeah.
Really, I know you're under pressure, but we're all under pressure here, which is why it's important that administration works more smoothly. But let's... my watch is 20 past. I don't know what others are saying. What is the time? No, I said what is the time? 20 past. So we've got 8 more minutes and then it's lunch. We want to shorten the lunch, not a full hour. There's no necessity. Let's make it 45 minutes. So we come back then at 2:15. See, 1:30 to 2:15. Please continue, DDG.
Thank you, Chair. We are coming to the Copyright Tribunal.
Finally. The tribunal, which is going to solve so many problems.
On page 34. On the model of the Copyright Tribunal, when we say we are strengthening the Copyright Tribunal, it's because currently there is a framework that is existing and we want to expand on it. The current constraints on the effectiveness and efficiency of the tribunal revolves on the availability of the judges from the bench to hear and adjudicate on the copyright license schemes. The focus of the tribunal currently is mainly on the license scheme, so the mandate is not wide enough. So the main area they function on is the licensing schemes, and they use judges. The judges sitting as they sit as commissioners, and they are designated by the judge president of the Transvaal from time to time, and they adjudicate and hear on matters of the license schemes. So this is the current framework. And we are saying that as a response to this bill and going forward on the different issues that are impacting on our artists, there's a proposal that the DTI will formally engage with the Department of Justice to request that the Chief Justice and the Judge President to designate 5 retired judges and 10 acting judges for a term period not exceeding 5 years to hear and adjudicate copyright disputes as commissioners of the Copyright Tribunal. So we are looking at 15 members who will be acting judges and retired judges to look at the matters of the tribunal. And they will be looking at the following functions. They will adjudicate any applications or referral made in terms of the Act, as well as the Companies Act and other relevant legislation, and they may make any appropriate orders in respect of an application or referral. They will hear matters referred to it by the Commission, a dispute resolution institution, or any regulatory authority, only if the dispute is related to copyright. So any matters referred to them, they will address it. They will adjudicate any application or referral made to it by any person, institution, or regulatory authority where the dispute can only be directly referred to the tribunal in terms of the Act and if such disputes are related to copyright. And they will settle disputes related to payment of royalties, in terms of the agreement and entered into as required by the Act, or in terms of other, and also in terms of agreements entered into in order to regulate any other matters in relation to copyright, or and any other disputes as well. So it will be broad. So the scope of their mandate will be widened. And on page 36, we are talking to the kinds of proceedings they will have. It will conduct its hearings in public. They will conduct their hearings in the inquisitorial manner, and they will do them as expeditiously as possible. They will be informal. Some of them will be informal as possible. And there are issues around the right to participate, and we are saying that the following persons may participate in a hearing before the tribunal in person or through a representative, and they may put questions to witnesses and inspect any books. So basically, it's just to say that the strengthening will also include the mechanisms of how the engagements in the tribunal will occur. So this is the proposals that we have so far, Chair. And there are some provisions in the bill that we saw as still applicable if you take them and you focus on the tribunal instead of the IP tribunal, the copyright. So like the functions that are in the bill, they are sufficient if you just tweak them, and other areas as well. So this is the model that we are proposing, Chair, in terms of the copyright tribunal. There are other things like how the appointments can take place and the processes, but this is a broader view of some of the areas that the tribunal will address.
Thank you very much. Honourable Khadebi, who else is there? No one else?
Chairperson, this broadening of the work is appreciated. I think the curveball which is coming here is that before this thing can be done, before it can be in the bill, the TTI must consult with Justice first. Will that thing be done before we come back in July? That's because if there's no agreement, then how can we legislate if it's still dependent upon consultation?
Is there any other points to be made yet? Because that's quite a serious one. Members, can we just focus on this point for a minute? Right, DDG.
Chair, the point that Honourable Hadebe is raising is very significant. We discussed this at length because the tribunal is not going to be a juristic person. It's currently within the CIPC, and they explained that there's a need, because they work with the courts, we need to work with judges. But then there's an alternative that we were discussing with them of allowing the minister to be the one who can appoint. Because we were also concerned about the processes of the judges, and you know, judges are not your readily available kind of legal experts that you just find, and we were concerned that we want this to be an easy process that is accessible. But this is one of the things that we were debating, to say, can we empower the minister to appoint members of the tribunal to avoid the process of judges and justice, and yeah. But they hold a different view. But it's not something that should be concerning the committee. We brought this here just to strengthen what is there already. So we just said, okay, because they already have this framework, let's add on it. But we think that the minister also can be a viable option.
Yes, it worries me that we're talking about a week, and you know, we are putting this up, advertising certain things, then we'll come back and we'll be taking a decision, and we really are, it would be in limbo if we don't have a timeline as to when the minister will engage. So is the minister aware of this? If he is aware, can we emphasize the urgency of this engagement, so that when we come back to the bill, we can put it in, but after the advertisement, etc., and we come back, it's going to be important that we have a decision. All right. Thank you, Advocate van der Merwe, and then I'll take Honourable Tierko.
Chairperson, thank you. When we are amending a tribunal, the functions, appointment, etc., I think it's the Superior Courts Act says that we must consult the Minister of Justice. We've done so with the Credit Amendment Bill, but I don't think it is something that the committee needs to leave to the Minister of DDI. It is something that this committee will have to do because this is part of the amendments that this committee is doing. So when we advertise, I would recommend that the committee sends a letter to the Minister of Justice and ask for their response.
I like that. It means it's going to be expedited because the committee's dealing with it. But I do want to everyone to know that we are breaking now until 2:15. We are adjourning until 2:15. Honourable Pachalia, I had some kind of apology through Honourable MacPherson. Would you just brief me again about yourself?
Committee's reconvening next week, Thursday. Right.
I'm not sure if it's on Wednesday. Thursday, Wednesday. Yes, Thursday. Tuesday, I know sugar cane or sugar something or the other.
Oh, okay.
Thing they've been busy with. Because they decided to work on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, not Monday and Friday.
Yeah.
They're overworked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not work if you can get it.
Sure. Can we get copies of all the basic things?
It's like a can of worms.
We're on the big check.